We are back for another episode of Uncut and Unfiltered, and today we have got a very special guest in the studio with us. Normally, we're joined by Posh Gotch. Unfortunately, he is off gallivanting around doing all sorts of other whiskey wonderful things. But today, we are joined instead by the wonderful global ambassador for spirits at Berry Brothers and Rudd, Joe. Welcome, welcome, welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you very well. Thank you very much for having me down.
Thank you so much for coming down. We really appreciate it. We're going to tuck in a second. But as always, joined by the Dram Pirate. Stevie, how are you, sir?
I'm good, mate. I'm very excited.
You know a little bit more about what's coming today than I do, because yes, it wasn't long ago that you actually went up to Berry's with Ian, with Posh Gotch.
Yep.
For an episode of the Enthusiast series, which if you haven't watched, guys, you can head over to the Whiskey Baron YouTube channel and you can watch Ian's Enthusiast series there. He's done loads of really cool and exciting things, but Berry's is kind of the first long form content that he's produced. And Joe, you very kindly brought him around Berry's, showcasing all sorts of crazy, wonderful things, from the very expansive history that you guys have there through to the spirits that you've got and, you know, the spirits that are coming. And I think that's kind of what you brought us today, right?
Yeah. So I thought we would talk probably looking in the future. With Berry's, you end up talking so much about the past that forget that we do actually have stuff coming out
definitely,
to talk about stuff.
Yeah.
Today I thought I'd bring you a first look for our UK spring release, our latest release of 7 casks. So I brought 6 samples down for us to try.
So this hasn't been released yet?
Nope.
When is this going to be coming out, then?
So this comes out on 19th of March.
19th of March. All right. Well, hopefully we will make sure that we release it just in time, maybe just prior to it coming out or just after it's been released.
Probably just after.
We'll make sure that we collaborate with you guys and the Berry's team to make sure that you're happy. But guys, either this is just about to come out or it's just dropped. So all of the whiskies that we're being very kindly being shared with today, they're going to be out for you guys now to have a little look at. So keep your eyes open. Is this the first time anyone outside the company has had to try that?
Yes. I think maybe a couple of people in the trade.
How exciting.
I thought, you know what?
What an honor. What a privilege.
Coming down after you came to our home, I thought I'd bring something a little bit special.
Well, yeah. What a special treat.
This tasting box has been sat at home for the last 10 days. I've been trying to find a good excuse to crack into it.
To break it out. Well, I have to say, steal it from in front of you there, because it was the first thing I said when I came into the studio. Wow, what a tasting box. And for all of you guys at home, hopefully you can see, it is a beautiful tasting set there. Really, really wonderful display piece. And again, you know, talk about miniatures, get tasting bits and pieces. Sometimes they can come fairly bland sort of displays and not much care given. This is a really wonderful gift. So do you sell a lot of tasting sets?
So no, these are, at the moment, these are created for people like yourselves. We send these out to people in the trade.
Okay.
So we split a couple of bottles. Our releases are split from international and UK sort of casks. So these tasting packs get sent out. We are hoping to do something with these a little bit in the future.
Oh, I think you definitely should.
They're
incredibly beautiful.
I'm not going to overpromise. There's a person in our office called Shirley Ann who, have even saying this, she probably wants to murder me. She hasn't even heard it yet. So yeah, if we can use these miniature bottles, it would be amazing.
They're beautiful. But fair enough, the miniatures aren't available for you guys at home just yet. But if it's something that you'd like to see, drop it in the comments and maybe we'll be able to convince Shirley Ann that that's something that you guys should do moving forward.
I'm just instantly saying, I'm really sorry, Shirley Ann.
It's all my fault. You can blame me. It's absolutely fine. I'll take the heat on that one. But cool. Okay, so a lineup of spring releases that are yet to come out. Ooh. Where would you like to start, Joe?
So I think we need to start with our small batch. So basically the whole idea of the spring release is that we choose our casks that match the season that's happening outside the door.
Okay.
So with spring, we're looking for stuff that's beginning to bring some fruits in there.
Okay.
Maybe a bit earthier, bring a bit of peat in there, but nothing heavy. Maybe step away from your PX finishes that we had in our winter release.
Okay.
So our first one is our small batch Glenlossie.
Okay.
And I'm just going to move this quickly so I can grab the bottle.
I love the fact that you guys are focused on creating something that's a little bit special, a little bit sort of thought out based on the time of year. That's wonderful. Really, really cool.
Seasonal.
Yeah. I think it's not something that a lot of people would necessarily focus on. And again, Berry's obviously such an expansive history. But as you say, releasing such wonderful things on such a regular basis nowadays, it's great that you have the capabilities to do those seasonal releases and keep stuff ticking out that is suitable based on the time of year. I think it it makes a big difference, certainly for a drinker like myself, who's not looking for the same thing time and time again. I'm always looking for something a little bit different, which is one reason why I love independent bottlings. I know we had a lot of discussion recently with people in the comments about IBs versus OBs and where to start. I think it was the Gordon and MacPhail episode. Lots of people were pitching in as to where they sort of got involved within their whiskey journey. I think most people start off with OBs, it seems. I didn't personally. But then as they sort of become a little bit more engaged and experimental and enthusiastic, I suppose, they're getting involved in IBs. And I think it's great that you guys are putting out that stuff based on the season at hand and the flavors that maybe you're enjoying, you know, from a food point of view or elsewhere. So really cool. I love it. Okay. So yeah. Glenlossie.
So this is a Hogshead. So these are actually three casks married together.
Okay.
So most of our releases are single cask, like quite a lot of IBs.
Yep.
But we always like to sort of, you know, with our releases, we always like to sort of choose one distillery that is less about the actual individual character of that cask.
Okay.
And more about sort of showing the distillery, really. And we normally choose distilleries that you don't really see as bottling. Glenlossie very much one of those ones.
For sure.
It goes so much into the Diageo's blends and other blends. And I just think it's a great sort of start distillery.
Definitely.
Really light, really delicate, sort of fruity, but a lovely texture. So I just thought it would be a nice place to start.
Sounds like a wonderful place to start. You've got my taste buds tingling already. I'm thirsty.
I am more interested in the fact that you started with IBs rather than OBs as your whiskey journey. That's quite unique.
I mean, I think, when I started, I suppose Johnny Walker and the easy ones to grab. But when I properly started getting into whiskey, it was when I worked in the industry. And so I think, I started off with IBs because it really allowed me to explore different cask types, different flavor profiles, and really get involved as opposed to just looking at a standard core release from a certain distillery and, oh, I like that or I don't like that. Mm. It really allowed me to get involved and start understanding the different components that were going in. So liquid, cask type, age, ABV as well.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the OBs can be bottled at a flat 40, 43, 46%, whereas the higher strength really allowed me to get involved and start understanding where those different flavors would either push through or start dropping off, adding more to myself and sort of messing around. So yeah, IBs for me were definitely a big part of my sort of journey to begin with. And equally, something that really taught me a lot was my Infinity bottle.
Yeah.
Within my first year of working in the industry, blending whiskies and playing around with that really allowed me to understand flavors and how they work and what works with what. And I suppose brought me that much further along my journey, that much quicker, you know? So yeah, definitely, seemingly so. Anyway, I thought I was maybe one of the normal ones, but abnormal as usual. Yeah. People in the Gordon and MacPhail episode did comment all saying would never start with IBs.
Yeah.
And people who are kind of 3 or 5 years along their journeys now just getting into IBs. So hopefully this will be a good episode for anyone who commented on the Gordon and MacPhail episode and maybe was a bit unsure about independent bottlings. I think you'd be struggling to find one that you'd go wrong with in the Berries lineup. Oh. You guys are seriously cool bottlers.
Yeah, you've been doing it for a while.
Doing it long enough, right? But at this point, you don't have the experience.
We've been doing it for about 2 centuries. So hopefully we're finding our feet with this.
Definitely.
Love to be able to tell you when we officially started, but we sadly destroyed all our records in a fire in about 1944. So,
for sure.
What
a shame.
Should we?
I haven't yet, mate. Thank you very much. Your special
glass. I'm going to use my A. Williams glass, but I'm not going to pour it all over myself trying to see the bottom to check who it was made by today. Managed to do that. Possibly our last filming there, Joe. Good luck.
Oh, no.
Spilling whiskey all over your lap to win.
Nothing's wrong. I'm just going to get my keys out because I've cut my nails and I can't open this. So,
if you need a... there's like a little corkscrew.
Oh, is there?
Or is it gone? Maybe there somewhere. Or is it on the shelf where the glasses are at the bottom, maybe?
It's all right.
He got it. There we go.
I feel like I need to sort of get this moving. I feel hampering myself there.
So, Stevie, did you try much of the stuff whilst you were over at Berries, or you were just busy behind the camera, weren't you?
As per usual. Actually, do you know what? Joe very kindly offered me a drop of the Glen Elgin we were tasting, wasn't it?
Glen Grant, sorry.
Okay, cool.
I wasn't feeling my best that day. It was probably the only time I've turned down a dram.
You said no. Wow. Okay. Fair enough.
I'm sorry. But yeah. However, I spent a lot of time looking at some seriously delicious mouth-watering liquids that
day.
In the shop. In the cellars.
Oh, don't. I'm very excited.
So thank you, Joe.
If I remember that, I would have brought you a little drop of it.
Don't worry.
Still got that bottle. Very much locked back in my cupboard.
Yeah.
So Glenlossie, and you're saying this is a blend of three just standard bourbon hogsheads?
Standard hogsheads, yeah.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, so our small batch are normally, depending on the cask type, normally 2 to 4 casks married together. So very much a small batch.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really want to just to sort of choose a liquid that shows the character of the distillery.
Yeah.
Highlighting the great work they do, you know, blending out some of those unique characters that you get from the individual cast that we'll talk about. And just sort of just trying some really delicious liquid. And I think this one is perfect as sort of one of those sort of workhorses of Northern Speyside.
Absolutely. What's the strength on this? Sorry, if you don't
mind. So this is 46.
Okay. Wow. So watered down.
Yeah.
Really wonderfully done, though.
I would have said in the 50s.
So I think it's wonderful and gentle, but it tastes like a... is there an age statement on this?
There is. So this is... I'm just going to move this again. So this one is distilled 2013.
Okay.
And it was bottled, I believe, sort of late December time. So probably 10 years old
or thereabouts. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
I'm going to get my maths right this time round.
For sure. We've got loads of people keen eyes at home. So yeah, no, absolutely.
Very observant.
But this is the interesting thing. You guys don't normally put an age statement on your bottles.
No.
So it's not a focus.
So what we normally do is we put the year of distilling and then we put the bottling year. It's something that we have always done. Because we think it's just one of those ones. It's key information that you really want to share. It's also along the line of what the wine industry do.
Yeah.
Wine industry don't normally put sort of the age of how long the wine's aged for. They normally put just the vintages and then the year it was bottled, either out of cask or sort of finally bottled. So it just follows along sort of with our wine side of our business.
For sure. I like that. Yeah. Nice consistency across the board.
One issue is that maths can be done wrong.
For sure. Well, listen, so long as it's not on the monthly, it doesn't matter. It's just us adding up wrong, isn't it? So that's grand. This is really, really wonderful Glenlossie, though. And I have to say, the fact that it has been watered down to 46, I think it's interesting. You think it tastes up in the 50s. I think it tastes like a really wonderful cask strength example of something that's been aged for actually a bit longer than 10 years. It tastes like something that's maybe 15, 18, 20 years old. I think you get those wonderful kind of soft fruits, but it's a really wonderful creamy mouth texture, and just some wonderful oak spice. And I think that's what's surprising to me, that it has been watered down to 46, obviously done very well and with good intention. We say it so many times on the podcast, I'm always happy to slate a bottler when it's watered down to 48, 46, 43, 40%, just for the sake clearly of let's get some more bottles on the shelves and make some more money. But when it works at 40% or 46, whatever it is, fair fucking play, you know? And I think that this works really, really nicely. You talk about spring releases and it being that sort of time of year. This is exactly what I want in my glass at this time of year. It's soft. It's gentle, it's fruity, it's well-rounded, and it's elegant, which is Glenlossie. It's exactly that. You've hit the nail on the head. It's really, really lovely.
I also think the thing I love about Glenlossie is it's all of those things, but it still has a lovely texture to it. Mm. One of the things that we've always looked for as a bottler is there are three elements, I'm sure I've mentioned before on the enthusiast channel was that we look for balance, texture and complexity,
right?
And it really does. I think this hits all three of those, because as you said, it's got that lovely wood smoke, it's not overpowering, it's got a lovely sort of longevity of flavor and texture, and is just, you know, I think it's an excellent example.
It's wonderfully woven, all of those things.
You talk about texture as well. To me, it's quite creamy on the forefront, but the tannins kind of take over, and that wood spice is not astringent, I wouldn't say, but slightly drying on the back end. And it's kind of a normally you don't see it so much in whiskies. You get one mouth texture, one mouth feel throughout, and lots of different flavors perhaps. But I'm kind of getting a change in mouth texture from that creamy beginning to then that sort of slightly more, I don't want to say, the word astringent is in my head. It's not that much though. It's very soft and very gentle, but just drying wonderful oak spice on the end. Really well balanced. Yeah. Really, really exciting. For 10 years old, I'm blown away.
Yes.
Out of interest, you bought these hogsheads. Were they just the standard hogsheads bought from Diageo, or did you put these into your own casks yourselves?
These ones, I think we bought these. We bought sort of some sister casks of these, and I think they came in the wood that we just got them in.
Really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Because again, when you're looking at a big conglomerate like Diageo, who are producing multiple millions of litres per annum, obviously they release certain amounts of stock into the open market for bottlers like Berry's and us over at the Whiskey Baron, which is amazing to have that privilege of getting really great brands like Glenlossie, under the Berry's name. Sometimes, though, when you're looking at so many multiple millions of litres, the casks can't always be amazing.
No.
And often the stuff that they'll release onto the market may not be some of their best stuff. You know?
No, you're never going to give your prize pony away, are you?
You know what I mean? Exactly. And it's understandable. You can't slate them for it. But, it does happen sometimes where you get hold of some stock from big conglomerates like Diageo. And if it's not been sort of re-wrapped or taken care of in a different way and sort of had the independent bottler put their own spin on it, sometimes it can come across a little bit bland. This is not bland. This is anything but bland. This is exceptional Glenlossie. Really, really wonderful. And it kind of, to your sort of early point, it's wonderful to see Glenlossie shine in such a way, because normally it would just be a component part of a blend that people don't really hear about, don't really know about. And when it's like this, it's really impressive.
It's lovely. Joe, where are we at price point? Do you know?
So this one, I do know. Hang on.
No rush.
He's counting
his
shekels already. He's trying to figure out, can I buy a bottle?
It'd be really interesting to know where this is at.
Yeah. What are you thinking? You said it was kind of a little bit strong on the forefront.
There was almost like there was a lot of alcohol present for me.
Okay.
You know, that may be the wood drying there, kind of, because it, I feel like they can be quite parallel sometimes for me, that kind of strong alcohol and that kind of wood drying. I wouldn't have guessed this, down in the 46, did you say?
Yeah,
46%.
I would have said around 50, or just over. But and that's a compliment.
But you think it sits well at that strength, and you think it's showing off its character.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've all had whiskies at 46%, and they've been like water, right?
Right.
So it's amazing that the liquid here takes the water so well.
Yeah, definitely.
So fair play. Price point?
So £70.
Okay.
£70 for a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Maybe a 10-year-old. In and around a 10-year-old. Glenlossie. Pretty fucking reasonable.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool.
I like it.
It's definitely kept its structure very well.
It has. That's exactly it. Yeah. It's kept its structure really, really nicely. It's a wonderful expression. I think it's, for 10-year-old Glenlossie, I think it's one of the better ones that I've had, to be honest. Like,
high praise.
Yeah. And this is it. Like I say, sometimes you get IB's bottling stuff that's clearly straight out of the Diageo or Pernod or White Mackay. They have not done anything to it. And it's just like, why would I buy this over the distillery version? Or why would I, why do I want this? I know exactly why I want this. It's delicious. You know what I mean? Like, it's banging. Really, really lovely. Sure. What a great start. What a beautiful
really
place to
good start.
Yeah.
Really good start. What do we have next, Joe?
So what do we have next? We are moving on to
there are so many great whiskies here to choose from. I don't know if we'll get through all of them today. I'm up for the challenge, but I don't know.
Have you seen the Craigie?
I've seen the Craigie here. So guys, obviously, if you're watching at home, Joe has very kindly bought us some full bottles just so you guys can see how these will be presented when they are released. We have got a High Coast 2012, which is from Sweden. We've got a Knock Do 2012 and Craigallachie, the bad boy of Speyside, as you all know, one of my absolute favorites. I'm still really looking forward to doing a Craigallachie episode. It's going to be so fucking cool. We'll definitely have, if the Craigallachie is in.
Oh, it is.
We're trying that one at least.
I mean, this is the one, that's the one that I've been waiting to try
as well.
Is that
the one you're most excited about? Okay,
fair. I was writing some of the tasting notes for these and I was not given the Craigallachie and I'm like, come on.
So tell us then, Joe, as you're opening that next one there, a little bit about your role, because you're the global ambassador for spirits at Berry's. What does that entail? What's your day-to-day looking like, other than coming around to plebeians like us and sharing your wonderful whiskies and shouting about the Barry's name, what is it that your sort of main responsibilities entail?
So my main role is basically I am the face of the brand. Good catch.
I'm very good at saving bottles that are tiptoeing, don't worry.
That is a good underrated skill.
Yeah.
So I basically am the face of the brand. I do a lot of educational pieces working with our trade partners around the world, with our sales team in the UK.
Okay.
So do a lot of sort of education, teaching people about whiskey, about sort of how to enjoy, how to drink, how to analyze whiskey.
Cool.
Because that is, I think, sort of just one of the delights of working in this industry. And then I do a lot also of masterclasses, tastings, going through our bottlings.
Okay.
Do a lot of, as sort of, as you've seen, do a lot of history tours. Quite a large part of my my job is tour guide and historian, which is okay. A part I love, absolutely love.
Yeah, I was going to say, it comes across in that Enthusiast Series episode. You are very well versed in the history of Barry's. It's so interesting to hear about, you know, as you said, you've got such a depth of history. And I think that that's something that so many people aspire to now. You know, you can tell your story moving forward, but so few people have literally hundreds of years going backwards. Wow. I mean, what a privilege and what an honor to be able to share those stories. So you must really love your job.
Absolutely love it. I've been working for Barry's for 5 years this year. And so the last 9 months, I've been officially doing this role. But really, before then, I was doing a lot of tastings, a lot of learning my trade, really, working with my predecessor, Ronnie Cox, who is a name some of you may know.
Absolutely. If you don't know Ronnie Cox, what are you doing?
I met him for the first time at the Whiskey Show when I was 2 weeks into a role in 2019. And I went, I don't know who this guy is, but I'm holding on to his coattails because I want whatever he has.
For sure.
So learning a lot from him. And then when he retired, the company decided they actually wanted an official global brand ambassador. So
Barry didn't have one before that point?
No. Wow. So Ronnie Cox was probably de facto brand ambassador, but he was never had the title.
Okay.
His job was basically to be Ronnie Cox.
Yeah.
He sort of, you know, sit there and sort of charm a room and, you know, be that. But he was never a brand ambassador. He never sort of worked on, you know, sort of the more modern style of like brand ambassador, where we build brands and sort of we talk to consumers and look at doing different things.
So what a privilege for you being the first global brand ambassador for Barry's. That's awesome, right?
It was quite an honour. You know, we've got a global brand ambassador who looks after number 3 gin, our gin brand, but we've never had one that officially does our whiskies and rums.
A shame, mate. Hard job.
I know. Someone had to do it.
Good on you for taking it on, Joe. Well done yourself. We already appreciate the hard work that you're doing. Fair enough.
Glad someone does.
Yeah. All right, so we've moved on to the second round of the day, which for everyone at home is a Knockdo, distilled 2012 and bottled 2023. So we're looking at a 10, maybe an 11-year-old whiskey. It's a single cask hogshead, is that right?
Yep.
Cool. And I'm going to assume that this is a cask strength.
It's
58.4.
Yeah.
So a little bit stronger. Out of interest, what was the thought behind leaving this one cask strength versus, for example, the Glenlossie, which we've watered down?
So our single casks are always at cask strength.
Cool.
It's only our sort of, you know, our core range, our classic range, or our small batch, which we bring down.
Okay.
Anything above that in this sort of this release, we always do single cask. What we want to do is we want to bottle sort of quite unique expressions of distilleries.
Right.
And we really believe that they really shine through at cask strength, because you really keep the character of the distillery, what they've done. People have spent a lot of time working on fermentation, sort of distillation, maturation of these casks, as well as our team doing the maturation. And we really feel like we want to keep that sort of unique fingerprint of the cask there. So sometimes with this one, we put it into a cask and we keep it just at the original cask. Sometimes we do finishing, which we'll get onto in a bit.
But cool.
Really, we want to just show the sort of uniqueness of the character. And I think this expression, the reason why I've moved on to this one next, is because it really shows what it is to keep it at cask strength. I don't think you really see it in independent bottlers. I don't think I've seen one, even though I haven't researched that much. Yeah.
I was going to say it's one that you don't see very often, right?
They do have a brand. They have Annock these days, which is going really well, doing some delicious whiskey. But this, I think, shows what that distillery does. It's kind of creates quite a meaty sort of Speyside. It's almost, I think this is a little bit like Craig Ellicke's younger brother. Small, two still distillery. And I just think it's just instantly on the nose. You already get some little bit of sulfur, a little bit of character that you would probably lose if you bring it down with a bit of water.
Definitely.
And I think it just kind of gives it some texture and some interest here. I think this is, one of the standout of our sort of release just on a traditional cask. Definitely. Rather than a finish.
And you've absolutely hit the nail on the head. What I'm really enjoying from nosing it from my first couple of sups is, you're right, Nokdo does tend to have that slightly more bulshy, richer, rounder, I've never described it as that myself, but verging on meaty character. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And finishing it could start complementing that. Watering it down could definitely wash that away. But I think what's wonderful here, we talked about, the potential for sort of standardized casks coming straight from the distillery sometimes to not be all that sort of impactful. And I don't think that this is. The cask really hasn't done huge amounts of the spirit. What's wonderful about that is you've got the distillate just shining through for what it is. The cask maybe has just allowed it to tame slightly over the 10 or 11 years, whatever it's been, that it's been maturing. But it hasn't really added, I wouldn't say, a huge amount of vanillins, huge amount of flavor. You don't get toffee or anything like that. It's actually quite stripped back and I don't want to say basic, in the best way. Do you know what I mean?
For sure. Really, it's really almost amazing. Like, and this is in no way, negative at all, because it's lovely, but it's almost got that kind of cleric kind of element to it coming through. That really raw, straight off the still.
Unrefined.
Beautiful, unrefined spirit in there, I completely agree.
But the good thing is I agree with you 100%. The difference is, and I think where people maybe would think, oh, come on, saying like cleric, it's not harsh.
No.
It's unrefined, but alcohol sits nicely in the glass.
We've all had cleric that hasn't been harsh. It's almost like, bottle of that now. That's sure. Delicious, right?
Definitely.
So, and that's why I'm saying it's not like I'm not being negative about it.
I hear you.
And I think back to Joe's point, it is you're bringing that distillery character through there, and you can really, really taste that.
I can't say I've actually really tried. I think I've only tried the Annock.
Yeah, once. I think me too. Ooh. Literally.
And it's something that I need to give a little bit more time and focus to. Is it an aged expression?
Yes, they have now got some aged expressions.
Yeah.
8, 10 and 12.
Yeah,
maybe
I was going to say 10 and 12,
as
I think
well.
I've seen.
Because I think I'd only tried it once at a whiskey festival. So when I saw this was coming out, I sort of ran out to try and find a couple of bottles to try.
Compare and contrast.
Yeah, because they still kind of keep a little bit of that texture. They lose some of this. Has got quite a lovely warmth at the end of it, I think, and sort of, bringing it down to bottling strength. I can't for life.
Yeah, there is a very light chili.
It's a little bit, and it's quite uplifting at the end to sort of, I think, gives longevity to the finish.
So is Annock, is it the same spirit? Same one?
So Nokdo is the name of the distillery.
Right.
It's been shut down more times, I think, than most, because it's tiny. And it's all, every time there's a problem, it seems to be closed and reopened.
Sure.
It was bought by Inverhouse in the late 80s. And by the same time, what's the other one? Knockandu was being opened. And I think they were worried about two distilleries having a very similar name and getting confused. So they named it Annock, which I believe is the hill that overlooks Nokdo. I believe, don't hold me on that. All I know is that one of our Scottish team member, her dog is called Annock after the whiskey. She loves it that much.
Oh, sounds
that's good. Shout out to Chris there.
High praise. I love it. Okay, very cool.
But yeah, so they kind of just had a a brand name just to sort of separate it.
And can you usually name Knock Do, or is it kind of,
it's not one of
not
these.
Not one that's readily available, though.
No.
Not one that you'd be able to buy, not that easily.
For sure.
I have tried to find the path of this. I've looked at our records to try and find the path of how this ended up with us, and I couldn't find it.
Right.
So it's either come through someone separately, or, you know, being given to us very early on, and the things have been lost. But yeah, I'm glad it has come to us.
An accidental delivery. Yeah.
And again, you know, we talk about seasonal releases. This is very different to the Glenlossie, which is light and fruity and easygoing, and obviously been brought down to a wonderful 46%. I can see that on a slightly brighter day, whereas this, you know, still in spring, certainly in the UK anyway, we had a lot of wet days and some still colder days, you know, and I think that this is perfect for one of those days, right? It's just that little bit warming. But like you say, it's not got heaps of peat or loads of sherry, or it's not overly rich.
Yeah.
And equally, again, I really don't think it's overly complex, which is quite nice. It's stripped back. It's wonderful distillate just shining through. It's at a wonderful cask strength. And it just, it's exactly like you say, it's got this warming finish that I'm actually really, really enjoying. Where are we at price point on this one? I'm fascinated by this.
So this one is this one's £75.
Okay. Yeah. Same as the last one, or was the last one?
So the other 70 for the last one. So this one's the next jump up.
For 58.4%, you know, and you know, again, 10 or 11-year-old liquid, pretty reasonable, I'd say. What are your thoughts, Stevie? Are you enjoying it? It's gone.
Let's go.
You must have enjoyed it.
It's finished. It was lovely. As you say, I love that the end there. Just very lightly warming. What next?
Well, I think we've teased the Craig Ellicky a couple of times. Oh. I think probably move on to this this beautiful red number. I'm
the real bad boy. Yeah.
I'm so happy. Shoved here.
So this Craig Ellicky, when was it distilled, bottled? They're all bottled 2023, aren't they?
They're all bottled December 23, January 24.
Okay, cool.
So just in time.
So this is a 10-year-old by the looks of it.
10-year-old, and
this one is we got it as a hogshead, and I picked up the wrong bottle. Classic. There we go. That one's better. So this one, once again, a hogshead, 2013 hogshead, and we've spent the last 2 years in a Margaux cask, so a wine finish.
Oh, this is so up. Do you know if it was a first? I thought it was sherry. Sorry.
I don't know.
Okay.
Just under 24 months.
Something that I'm fascinated about. You guys at Berry's, obviously, kind of having your start in wine. I know whiskey has been a focal part. Pretty much all along, or certainly for the last 100+ years. But wine is the main part of your business, it's fair to say, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah?
I think it's probably wine is currently what we're most known for.
Okay, maybe that's a better way of saying it. You're better known for your wine.
At the moment, if you go back 25 years, you would know Berry's for Cutty Sark, our blended whiskey. And people, I think, had conversations in reverse like, oh, you do wine.
Right. Okay, that's interesting.
Now we're sort of, you know, much more focused on the wine has sort of grown over the last 20 years to be the predominant. It's an ebb and flow with our history.
Well, I mean, you guys have also owned the Glenrothes at points. Yeah. And so, you know, I completely understand. Sorry, not to take away from your huge impact on the spirits industry. I would think of Berry's and I would first think wine.
Yeah.
And obviously getting your hands on so many fantastic bottles, but also a lot of on-premier wine, I'm going to guess. Mm-hmm. You probably have access to some fantastic wine casks.
Yes.
Question for you is this cask from your sort of wine side of your business, or is this, how do you source casks? I'm fascinated.
I was waiting for this question about this cask.
Am I going to get you in trouble with somebody else now? Another side of the business is going to be asking the wrong fucking questions.
I thought this morning when I woke up, and I'm like, I'm going to have to find out where this cask came from.
Right.
And I have looked once again into our records, and I just don't know.
Okay.
So
fair enough.
Quite all of our wine casks do come from our wine partners.
Okay.
But then again, we also have, we work with our cooperage out in Spain, who also under our request, do wine cast finishes.
Okay.
For this one, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm guessing just by the color and. If I can get into it, hopefully we can tell from the flavour if it's
for sure. Yeah.
I am apparently not having any fun with these bottles today. never cut your fingernails before a tasting. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Margaux is one of my favourites. I know nothing about wine, to be honest, other than what I like. Bordeaux, Burgundy is definitely my sort of favourites. But Craigellachie, I thought this was a sherry cask when we were talking about it beforehand. The fact that this is a wine cask finish for 2 years.
So I think our whiskey of the year last year, if I'm right, was the Craigellachie in wine, was it?
I believe that Craigellachie Hotel single cask
was
a sherry. Sherry cask.
It was sherry, okay.
Yeah.
There was one where we've had a couple of Craigellachies finished in wine. On the
18-year-old that Ian brought along very kindly, the exceptional cask.
Ah, that was what, yeah.
Yeah.
And
which was, again, in our half-year roundup.
Right.
So where we were at.
Came in twice,
that
yeah.
That was in, yeah.
It always works so well, Craigellachie and red wine.
I think when you're looking at meaty whiskies or peaty whiskies, mm-hmm. for me anyway, so I've been massively focused on, the tannins of wine match them so perfectly because you get these big, bolshy flavors that complement each other quite nicely. The sweetness of the wine, the sort of textures of the tannins complementing the meatiness of the whiskey or the peatiness complemented by the sweetness. It for me, it's just such a winning combination. Interesting to move, as you said, not do. I've never thought of it as Craigellachie's younger brother, but I'm going to steal that one from now on.
You're thank more you. Than welcome.
I think you're spot on, and this is going to be a real, I'm beyond excited right now.
Nice.
Oh, I really hope this one lives up to.
If it doesn't, I will be brutally fucking honest. You'll have somebody else, some other department say, why did you share this with him? He's an asshole. Right. Exciting stuff.
Nice little nose prickle there, actually.
Mm.
So can you tell us much? So this is Chateau Margaux.
Yep.
Can you tell us much about Chateau Margaux? I know I'm putting you on the spot completely. I know your speciality, and you said this to me beforehand. Yep. I'm not focused on wine. So please don't feel put on the spot.
So under the bus you go, Joe.
Yeah, so there you go. Goodbye. Can you tell us anything about it?
Yeah, so... I think, hang on, I'm going to caveat this quite heavily.
But yeah, no, look, I can't hold Joe to any of this. He's a spirit specialist, and I've put him seriously on the spot here.
Because I think I probably kind of said this before, but now I'm questioning myself just because I think Margaux is a Bordeaux. I think so as well. Yeah, again. I think it's one of the sort of more heavier... actually, no, I'm going to move into confidence now. I'm pretty sure it's one of those sort of heavier Bordeaux blends.
Yeah.
Ones that sort of, always has kind of, it's one of the ones you buy when it's younger and they say, oh, don't drink that for 10 years.
For sure. I think.
Yeah.
A really good one to sit in the cellar, let it age for a long time. The older it gets, in theory, the better it gets.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's how I think Margaux. But again, I know nothing.
Yeah.
So okay,
and cool. I think yeah. So with this, and we've done this, and we've played around with Margaux, and we've played around with Pomerols, which are in the same sort of category
for sure.
I think when they kind of get to that, when you get a good cask that's had sort of proper aging of that wine in, and it's really quite ready for that whiskey.
Okay,
you end up with beautiful dark fruits that come out of this. I've instantly sort of put this to my nose, and you're right, there's a bit of tingle on the nose, but then when you find it, there's a bit of like black cherry in there. I always find them a little bit like cough lozenges,
right?
Like cherry lozenges and stuff like that. When I find sort of, as you said, meaty whiskies with wine casks, I find they really do kind of get almost medicinal on the nose. I think it's just one of those ones that haven't actually tasted this yet, but instantly,
tried this one at all yet?
Nope.
Oh,
no, I was waiting for this.
Okay, well, you're very kind of sharing with us. We'll all find out what we think.
Tuck in, guys.
You look excited, Steve. Talk to us.
It's chewy. Like you say, it's got that sort of dark cherry, dark fruits, almost like a kind of meaty, sticky toffee pudding-esque. It's yummy. You can chew on this all afternoon. Yeah. And given that it's a finish as well, and the colour, I would probably say that I'd go a bit with that. Maybe as a first fill.
Yep.
if not second, definitely. Yeah. And sometimes the integration for me with finishes in that short period of time in things like wine, sometimes it doesn't marry quite well, you know. This, I think, has integrated
beautifully,
just right. Yeah. But let me know your thoughts, guys.
Yeah, this is dark cherries, Black Forest Gatto. It's got a lot of texture. It's interesting that I'm not a big, when you talk about sort of cherry sweets or cherry lozenges.
I thought you said, yeah.
I hate that.
I'm not a big lozenger fan.
I'm not when it comes to cherry sweet. I'd always go for orange or, you know.
Cherry drops?
Yeah.
Classic.
Oh, disgusting. Cannot stand them. So I wouldn't ever associate it with that, but I kind of know what you mean and as well from the kind of almost medicinal forefront, but it's very pleasant. I say I don't like that sort of, I understand what you mean. To me, yeah, it's not actually as bulshy as I thought it would be, which suggests to me potentially a second fill cask. It's really wonderfully integrated, though. Stevie's absolutely right. For only a two-year finish, it's had a really wonderful impact. The tannins are very well blended together. And it's really...
Sorry, what's the strength?
It's 56.2.
Okay. Yeah, I guess cask strength then, probably.
So it's a hogshead or potentially a barrique if it's Margaux. But it says hogshead. So yeah. We're saying hogshead.
Joe?
The fact that it's only 2 years first... old, I'm very impressed by the Craigallachie.
I am. I think it's... That is wonderful. That is... I may just buy this bottle.
I think I will. And price point?
Price point is...
Because I'm probably going to sign up to the mailing list for this.
£90.
Okay. For... Now how it tastes, I think that's so reasonable.
I love the way the tannins are integrated. It's got this really wonderful sweetness that tethers off with the drying, the meatiness of the Craigallachie. It all just ties in so beautifully. This is a wonderful expression. But again, you know, talk about meaty or peaty whiskies in wine casks, and one that I know you always think of and I always think of is our Port Charlotte, the Von Ramene that we bottled. Von Ramene obviously being kind of the epitome of Burgundy, but similar styles, right? That was so thick and bold and bulshy and, to a lot of people, overpowering, over the hill, you know, too much.
Offensive.
And I think that this is, as we can be, right? I think it suits us perfectly. But I think that this is, again, we talk about seasonal releases. It's got that, but it's to a line. It's to a point. It's well measured. You know, the fact that you can tell that it's a finish.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful finish. And again, Berry's doing what Berry's does so well with all of the wealth of experience that you guys have over the last few hundred years, you know, talk about the Glenlossie, watering that down. It's beautifully done. Looking at this one, it's been left at a cask strength, but it's been finished. And to me, it's just been finished for a really wonderful amount of time. Everything is balanced. There's nothing that's missing. There's nothing that's lacking. You know, it's everything and more. And at 56.2, I think, again, the alcohol just sits in the glass so fucking well. Like, really, really delicious and Moorish. This is one of those ones that I just will go back to again and again, and I'm keeping the rest of this sample. And, you know, it's just so fucking tasty. It really
I poured myself quite a short, you know, got a few whiskeys to get
sorry,
through.
Sorry, yeah, you're not having any more, man.
I kept eyeing it up.
I didn't think
the other bottles we poured, that had quite a lot left in it.
I'm trying to page through the, you know, the lineup we have here today, but I could easily just finish.
Exceptional. It's just so well put together. And again, a wonderful expression of Craigallachie, and to me, tastes older than 10.
Yeah.
It tastes quite a bit older than 10. It's actually mellowed. I know that it's 56.2, and that's, you know, a lot of people at home maybe will think, oh, that's quite strong. Maybe it's so well integrated. It tastes to me like it's been in cask for 15 plus years again, and it's just had time to mellow and ease and become this wonderfully balanced and mature expression, you know?
For sure. So, Joe, do you have anything to do, or can you tell us anything about how you source your casks, how you choose them? Because you obviously probably are not short of a cask or two, right, in your, you know, warehouses. How does it go when you are choosing casks? Is that something you're involved with? Or
So I'm slowly beginning to help out. We have a new whiskey, our spirit curator, Felix Deer, who joined us from Boutiquey. who's recently joined us. So I'm working with him a lot closer. But how we source our casks are, as you said, sort of, we have got our connection to the wine trade. We've got our wonderful cooperage out in Spain that we work very closely with, as well as, you know, buying casks. Sometimes when we buy casks, we like to reuse the ones that we've got different spirits in. We've got one coming up, which we'll talk about. So we very much have a wealth of actual casks that we can use.
Okay.
So it means that when we're actually doing our finishes, when we're having a look at what to sort of how to finish, we have a lot more sort of freedom of actually looking at what that initial spirit is doing and actually trying to match flavors with it. Last year we did a couple of sort of like lighter Highlands, like we did a Glencadam in a Pinot de Chiron cask, because we were tasting it and we just found that it was like a bit of peach, a bit of cream that was coming through, classic Glencadam. And then actually, you know what? What's going to match that? What's really going to sort of heighten up those yellow fruits, bring out a bit more spice, bring a bit of texture to quite a light spirit, was the Pinot cask. So very much sort of our team. I do not take any. I literally sit in the room and go, yes, that sounds great. Please just keep bringing the samples to me. But yeah, so we have very much, we have a great finishing program, which just, for me, is just exciting, because you end up with things like with sort of like this Craig Allegheny, yeah, which just is just in harmony between the two, the distiller and the wood.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as I sip on it more, I'm here and it's this wonderful sweet stone fruit start, quite plummy. And then it does get a little bit darker going into the cherries and then richer, the sort of chocolatey. Yeah, Black Forest Gâteau-esque. It's just so wonderful. And the way those tannins just linger in your mouth and just keep going and going. I'm sorry, I'm making...
He's hit. He's hit the song.
None left. Fuck off. Leave me alone. Don't look at me. This is by far my favorite. And I tell you what, for £90, it's so worth it. We talk about, again, the fact that you don't put age statements on these. You know, we talked about this before, and Craigallachie is one that keeps coming up actually on this note, is... Sometimes you see an age statement and you think, oh, well, it's worth it or it's not worth it based on the price and the age statement. This is beyond its years.
Yeah.
And I think a large part of that is the fantastic finish that you've done, this expertly chosen cask that just matches the liquid so well and complements it in so many different ways. And like I say, I would, in a blind tasting, definitely think this is 15 plus, you know? And so when you're thinking about it from that point of view, you know, I mean, already... 10-year-old Craigallachie in a Margaux cask at £90, it's a buy, right? Mm. But when you're looking at it from the point of view of actually it's beyond its years, it's got the depth and maturity of a much older dram, it's just a no fucking brainer. But I won't spoil what we think of it just yet, guys. We'll get to the ratings at the end.
I can breathe out, you know.
Yeah, no, you're all right on this one.
Most people have to wait until the end. No, thank you very much.
You're okay on this one, I think, definitely. All right, cool. Let's move on before Stevie really launches himself over and tries to get the rest of the end of this sample dram here that I'm saving. What is next in the lineup? What else have we got? We've got some wonderful whiskies left.
I know. How adventurous are we feeling? We've got four more left. We can dive into all of these.
Entirely up to you, Joe. We're here for you. And,
yep.
You know, if we need to do the tough work for all of you at home and try four more whiskies, we'll do it. We'll do the seven if that's what we need to do. It's entirely up to you, though. So,
well, I think we'll before we jump into Pete, we'll jump to North Speyside. This is a very Speyside heavy release, this one.
Okay, cool.
Very much... As have you seen with the ones we've released so far? Maybe some of those more older style Speysides. To caveat that with the Glendossie, which I think is that more modern, lighter floral style. And we're going to go to a bit of a favourite of mine, a Glengarry, but a port finish. Oh, yes. Glengarry.
Glengarry is an unsung hero.
Yeah,
real unsung hero.
For me, sort of. Whiskey perfection can be summed up in Glengarry finished in like sherry, but I think port sort of takes it. If you get it right, once again, haven't tried this one, been waiting for this occasion.
You could be setting yourself up for failure here. Careful. Fair enough. No, absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate what you mean. Sometimes the sort of standardized thought process of, oh, well, this matches up perfectly with a sherry cask or a bourbon or whatever it's great, but then when you do experiment with just something a little bit different, add that next depth of flavor, it can be wonderful.
It's got a beautiful kind of rosé tint to it, hasn't it, almost, you know, which obviously port does. Sorry, Joe.
This is a beautiful
did you say whiskey, this is a finish?
This is a finish.
Yep.
Yep.
And for how long do we know?
I think this one was 18 months.
Okay.
I think we did this the latter half of 2021.
All right, cool.
So distilled 2011, bottled 23. So we're looking at an 11, maybe 12-year-old whiskey, 56.5. And it's a hogshead finished in a port hogshead.
Yep.
Which not as common. So obviously you've had that cooper to yourself.
Yep.
Port
yep.
normally is matured in port pipes, which are big 700-litre, not butts, pipes, but... yeah, big old casks, really. So wonderful to see. It is just such a beautiful colour.
Lovely.
There is something beautifully elegant about colour of a port finish, isn't there? Yeah. That sort of lovely sort of pink tinge that sort of, you know, especially when you sort of see it on a shelf or when you see it on a... I find they stand out so well in whiskey shows when you've got that white tabletop and you just walk down, all you can just see is this rosé thing. And
yes.
I want to try that one, please.
It's very rare in my mind. You're absolutely right. I think a port finished whiskey that's finished in a good port cask and left natural colour, I find it hard to find better looking whiskies, do you know? And this is the thing, like, we always buy whiskey, really, unless we're lucky enough to have somebody like yourself visit us and share all these samples so that we know what we're getting into. If you're buying a full bottle off the shelf, you're buying very much on the information that's given to you, but it's all about the look and the color.
Yes.
And what's such a shame for me is how so many brands now will pour a load of caramel and coloring into their whiskies. Something I wanted to come on to. What a beautiful way to get into it. You're always natural colour of berries?
Always natural colour.
You don't mess around.
Single cask, always unchill filtered, you know, natural colour.
Is there any of your expressions that you add colour or you chill filter?
So we do have one, which is our classic range sherry cask.
Oh, okay.
Which is our sort of, you know, our core range. It's £45 a bottle.
Okay.
What we want, that is very much our expression of what sherry cask Speyside whiskey is all about.
Okay.
We do add a tiny bit of caramel into that,
okay.
just to get sort of consistency along the range, because we are messing around with a mixture of refill and first fill sherry butts those casks. The sort of change can be quite kind of different. So we just touch a little bit occasionally when it needs it.
Well, for a core range product, I think we'll judge you too harshly.
No.
And we're not trying it today, so we can't judge you anyway. We'll be nice. We'll be nice. I'll behave myself.
But anything in our single cast, we put it through a sieve to take out any lumps, and then we put it straight into a bottle. That's all we do.
I judge you for taking out the lumps. I like cheering a bit of wood every now and then, to be honest. But sure, look, it's a standard, so fair enough. Okay, so we're talking, sorry, I said 10, no, 11, 12.
11, 12.
Do you know what
12-year-old Glengarry.
The nose takes me back to being a little kid, and it's that paper bag, finishing school for me, getting a pick and mix pack of sweets, opening that bag, nose it in. Yeah, it's got that very sweet, that kind of almost like marshmallow, tutti frutti-ish.
Marshmallow, that's a good shout, dude. Fuck, yeah.
No, I haven't tasted it yet, but you know,
I haven't tasted it either, but on the nose.
Bag of pick and mix, you know, just anyway, yeah.
And it's actually, it's for 50, sorry, I said 56, didn't I? 56.5. For 56.5. You could go swimming in this. There is no nose prickle, nothing interfering with the wonderful, soft, sweet flavours that are coming out there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember no nose prickle on the bag of sweets as a kid. So,
that's exactly what I mean, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
It's exactly that. Sure. It's just soft, it's gentle, it's inviting, it's, you know, very approachable. Marshmallows. I think I've been swung there.
Mm.
I think you've given me a little bit of placebo effect, potentially, but what a good shout.
See, I was going down a different way. I was going a little bit like, do you remember Flying Saucers?
Yes.
Before you bit into them.
Yes.
There's a little bit of sherbet there, but there is just that sort of sugared sweetness.
Yep. And that follows through on the palate as well. It's got that lovely port drying element to it that I love port finishes when they're done right, obviously. Sometimes they're not. But that kind of sweetness carries through there. And it's not like, and I know what I'm talking about here is very artificial sweetness. It is that, but it's not that. Yeah, and it doesn't even taste the strength that it is either.
It's quite juicy. It's sort of carried carried that juiciness along. And, it's been brilliant.
Completely agree.
Yeah. And I think this is the joys of Glengarry. I think Glengarry can really hold its weight with a good finish. It still shines through for quite a light spirit compared to, you know, the Craigellachie that we've just gone into. This really
still holds its own.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Isn't killed off for a spirit which is probably known to be a bit lighter.
And I go out on a limb here and say there's almost like I keep saying herbaceous, that's not the right word for it, but there is a kind of like a herby element at the end there for me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I find until Glengarry gets much older, it still keeps its grassiness. Its new make is very grassy.
Right.
I think they've got quite a long fermentation time that kind of keeps that.
Okay.
Keeps that sort of that grassiness, that freshness. And I think it shines through here a little bit. Maybe like damp, dewy grass sort of at the end. Is
right.
That where I'm seeing that.
Yeah. And I always get sort of
adds a bit more of a forest floor element, though.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bit more
piney
depth. Maybe a little bit piney. I think almost. A little bit dirty, but it's not quite as green,
right?
As I, you know, there's a bit more there's greenness there, there's pininess there,
sure,
but there's some depth behind it. I'm getting this really weird and weird in a good way. Sorry, I say weird and people think it's terrible. I'm getting this really interesting mouthfeel, almost like a separation at the very, very beginning. If I swirl it around my mouth, I'm getting this separation almost as if it's between. Like whiskey and port almost. It's like two separate things. And as it stays in your mouth, just for a couple of seconds, it's at the very forefront. They then come together in this beautiful sort of amalgamation, this wonderful way. There's a word I cannot think of. But you know when you have almost oil and water separating?
Yes. Yep.
Do you know what I mean? I'm getting this kind of, it's very strange. It's really interesting. But this, just the initial mouthfeel is kind of that separation between two things, and then they come together in this really wonderful way.
Salinity?
No. So, no, it's not
good,
salinity.
Good word, though.
Yeah.
Word of the day, you
know,
everybody.
Almost like a symphony, you know, those sort of, you know, those competing parts that can bring together.
Yeah, but it's weird that they're, and sorry if I said it again, it's weird. It's strange, it's interesting that they're separated to begin with, because it's not like, sometimes you'll try a finish, you know, and there's clearly been some sherry or some port or something left in the cask. And it's kind of like, okay, am I drinking whiskey or am I drinking sherry? It's not that. It's not an overpowering port. It's not, but there's just this slight separation to begin with. And exactly, they do. It's really interesting. Your mouth is almost trying to get around it. And then it comes together in this symphony of flavor and character and just beautiful. Not an overly long finish, a medium length finish, but just some really nice characteristics coming through. The tannins married together with the flavor really wonderfully. It's different Glengarry. It's interesting. And again, it really does stand up to that. The fact that we did the Craigellachie first.
Yeah.
Now trying this, if you would sort of show me to them before, I would have said, well, obviously the Glengarry first. You know, we don't want to overshadow it too
hit
much.
Hit the peak,
you know,
of the mountain and start. Yeah, no.
But it's really, it's a wonderful, you know your stuff, even though you didn't try either of them. You're presenting them in a wonderful way here, Joe. Good man.
I had a feeling this was gonna hold up to itself.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah. Even though I find it really interesting that you're correcting yourself with your wording. I find when I talk, especially about Speyside,
right,
I have to correct myself because the wording I use a lot of wording, especially with the southern distilleries of like dirty, filthy, you know, a bit mulchy.
Oh, I use that all the time.
All of those words, and because it makes so much sense to me, and then you realise you're in front of a room full of people that may not understand that.
This is a good
dirty, mulchy, filthy.
You're thoroughly enjoying it.
This is great. Oh, these are all negative words. Yeah, you know, this is good. This is what old Speyside should be like.
It's actually, I was at a tasting recently enough, and I said weird, and actually. It was at the Edinburgh Whiskey Festival, and we had a wonderful guest on sharing some really wonderful whiskey. And I said it was weird, and she took almost offense to it. And I was like, no, I didn't mean it offensively. It's a good thing, you know. Sorry, I just mean weird is indifferent. Maybe, sorry. Do you know what I mean? So this is the thing. Yeah, sometimes you are checking yourself, and especially for all of our wonderful audience at home. I think most of them are kind of at least well on their journey. I don't think we have many new drinkers.
Weirdos like us, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. I think most of them are complete fucking degenerates and strange.
They love the filth.
And- yeah, they love that filth and the dirt and the weirdness of it all. Otherwise, why the fuck would they be listening to us, right? But yeah, no, I think this is, it is, it's strange, it's different. I've never had that sort of a mouth texture before. Like I say, sometimes you get a dram and it is like, this is sherry or this is port, this is wine. Oh, come on, lads, you've left something in the cask here. Yeah. It's not that at all, but it's just this almost separation in liquid. It's indescribable. It's really challenging and different.
Yeah, I think it comes just from that sort of a sweeter top note and that sort of, you know, the body of the of that port and then sort of that lighter sort of linger just in competition, but sort of, you know, dancing together.
Definitely.
When I was starting my journey, I had sort of a... I got taught about finishing and stuff like that. And someone said that if it's not an orchestra in your mouth, if it's not bringing it together all at the end, it's not the crescendo of like the London Symphony Orchestra, then you're not doing it right because it's meant to take you on a journey.
Yes.
That's the joys of finishing.
Definitely.
If you've got something, as you said, that has maybe got a little bit left in the wood, then why not just drink sherry?
Exactly.
Because you know what? It's cheaper.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. No, definitely.
But yeah, but I think these finishes are just sort of, you know, as I said, I can take no credit for this. I literally open these bottles and chat with you guys. I have no hand in the craft.
Well, whoever has had a hand in this seriously knows what they're doing. It's really impressive. And again, wonderful to see Glengarry, a name that you probably won't have heard about huge amounts outside of the OB. It's not easy to get your hands on. We've got a few casks over at the Whiskey Brown. I'm so excited about them. And maybe now I'll look at some
Paul's
casks. Maybe now I have to. I think, you know, it's got to be considered because this...
You've got to give a nod to Berries if we do.
Oh, this, we'll definitely shout out.
We'll collaborate maybe.
So, you know, spring release available in 19th of March and also in about 2 or 3 years' time.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. No, this is wonderful. This is really, really, this is the most challenging, the most interesting of the day.
Mm.
I prefer the Craigellachie, but I'm a fiend for that sort of a style. This is very different.
Yeah.
You know, we started with two very classic, very kind of stripped back, elegant whiskies, moving on to the Craigellachie, showcasing how you guys do finishes so well. And I think a beautiful follow-up, because again, it's just reaffirming that Berries knows what they're fucking doing when it comes to finishing good liquid in cool casks. This is really, really different. God, yeah, I'm very excited impressive. About this stream. Really. I'm going to have to start saving some fucking money. I've only got a month. Oh, God. Need to make sure all of the piggy bank is going to be broken open here, I think. Where are we going next?
So then, where are we going? I think we're going to go to a bit of Highland Peat next. We're going to go to a bit of a favourite of Berries to bottle, you know, because it's normally a bit decisive, but I don't think we've ever bottled a bad one. We're going to Ardmore.
I love Ardmore. I was hoping, I was waiting. Is it going to be Rudemore from Glenturret? No.
And we had Ardmore last night on our intro.
We did the Ardmore Legacy.
Right. And for £20, we were saying...
I think the intro to Pete might come out after this episode now, to be honest.
For sure, for sure. However...
And so keep your eyes open, guys. We're going to have an intro to Pete episode, which does include an Ardmore, because Ardmore is such a wonderful Highland whiskey. It's got a really great mainland style of peat. And yeah, no, I think, sorry, what was your point there, Stevie?
Well, I thought you were kind of shutting me up to not spoil the end of the episode.
I don't want to spoil anything. Go on. No.
If it was coming out afterwards. No, I was just sort of saying, thank you, Joe. You know, given the line off of Intro to Pete, Ardmore stood so strong from their entry level bottle.
Non-age statement,
Non-age statement at £20. It was such a great liquid. I'm very excited to try it coming off the back of that last night. I don't actually drink Ardmore too much, unfortunately.
It's one of my favourites.
Is it?
As I think I said in the Intro to Pete episode, looking at Ardmore, it's one of those ones where I would always search out an IB. Again, going back to our start of the conversation, I really did start, thank you, Stevie, with IBs and my journey and exploring and seeing what was what. And I think Ardmore is a great example of that, because you try their legacy, you try their core range. And don't get me wrong, it's lovely. It's great stuff. But what have we got here, actually, interest? This is just a plain hogshead?
So, no, this is a Madeira finish. This is definitely another one of our finishes.
Cool.
But with that sort of earthy Ardmore peat.
I love it.
This one I have tried.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right.
This one I wrote the tasting notes.
I was going to say. So you're a lot of writing tasting notes as part of your job, which is such a cool job to have. I love the writing taste. I'm not sure I'm very good at it, but I'd love to hear your tasting notes once we start getting into this. But exactly that, I think, once you look at IB Ardmore's and looking at those interesting finishes, Madeira, really wonderful sort of desserty wine. You know, it's where you can start really getting to grips with what you like, what you don't like, and what you want to take on to your next dram in your whiskey journey. Madeira isn't something that you'll see everywhere, but in the IB market, people are toying around with these wonderful maturations, finishes, etc. And I think that for me, Ardmore is such a diverse spirit, whether it is their stripped back core range or an IB version where it's just a bourbon matured, untouched, unadulterated, leave it as, you know, to sing the mainland peat that it sings, or you start putting these wonderful sherry, wine, fortified wine, all of these different sorts of finishes on it. It's just interesting, you know, and it works in such so many different ways. So cool. All right. So where are we at then? We've got a 2009 Ardmore bottled in 2023. So 13, maybe 14 years old. Madeira finish. How long was the finish, Joe?
I think this was another one of our 18 months. But
okay.
Yeah, I've did look
up. Not promising anything.
And now I've...
Don't worry. We won't hold you to anything yet. Not a bother at all. 53.6, which is, again, presumably cask strength.
Yep.
All of these cask strength are the first. Cool. Great to know. And interesting, actually, because at 13, 14 years old, 53.6, it's dropped a little.
Yeah.
You know, not a huge amount. I'll probably be asking you something again. I'll put you on the spot.
No,
do you know if it was filled at 63.5?
Ardmore normally do.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. I think they
by and large. Such, I've seen only a few casks that were filled at higher strengths, but normally casked at 63, 63.4,
63.5. Yeah. This is sadly one that we haven't had much information about.
Okay.
There's
just buy it a little bit later in its journey.
A lot of casks, not always, but sometimes we buy liquid, we buy casks, and they don't really come with much information. Right. And this one was one of those. Sometimes we get all the information, and I kind of read through it and geek out about it and go, oh, exciting about this. But yeah, other times we just kind of, you know, this is the year, this is it, this is what we've kind of got.
Fair
and,
play.
You know, work it out from your own nose. And that's part of my job I love.
For sure.
Sort of, you know, trying to just break down these sort of spirits and actually trying to work out what's happened to them. So, yeah. Sure.
Definitely.
So I think this was standard film, 63.5, but it's held its alcohol well for something which is, 14-ish years.
For sure. Interesting. Ardmore's Beam, isn't it? I'm just trying to think. Ardmore's Beam Centaur.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, one of their kind of workhorse distilleries. I know that they've got their legacy and a bit of a core range. They very much focus on the legacy. And it's so accessible. You guys can pick it up in the supermarkets at great prices. I think you picked it up in Morrison's for like £21. Mm-hmm. I know it was on offer, but still £21 for a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah.
Pretty fucking good. But this is the thing. Once you start getting into the IB ranges, like I say, you can really explore how diverse this spirit is. I want to tuck in him.
Have you not yet?
I've not even nosed it, my guy. Where are you at? Talk to us so I can shut up and enjoy it.
I'm getting this lovely, rich, stewed fruit cooking, cinnamon, cloves, that sort of thing going on.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
I tell you what, I'm getting no peat on the nose.
No. And I got a really kind of...
smell like an Ardmore.
Like a kind of over-ripened grilled pineapple on the nose, you know, like in that smoky.
I get the stewed fruits. I'm not getting the pineapple yet, but give me a second. But that's,
I don't know, that's very generic to say,
fruits,
but like
apples and pears.
But yeah, exactly that.
A little bit of plumminess in there as well.
Yep. Bit of cinnamon on it, you
but
know.
It's very light and very, again, sorry, 53.6. It's so light and approachable and elegant and soft on the nose. There's actually
wonderful.
Not a huge amount really going on there for me on the nose. It's just very easy.
Sorry, I zoned out a little bit throughout your chat there. Did you say this is a finish?
That's very rude.
I'm just being honest.
So yes, Madeira
You
finish.
Never fucking listen to me. Like an old married couple, Joe. Yeah, we believe, Joe believes,
I'm just human.
An 18-month finish. That's okay. Right. People probably still, hopefully you're with us at home.
I'm sure they've
tuned out like Stevie. Pay attention. We've got a wonderful guest here sharing some great whiskies. We believe circa 18 months.
Yeah, about 18 months. Okay. I think our Madeira cask came in at the end of 2021.
Okay. Again.
No, that would make it 2 years. Once again, maths is failing me.
Yeah, Joe, people are going to come for you, mate.
Any maths teacher that I had in the past was a bad student. I apologise.
You don't need maths for whiskey. Fuck them. Yeah. Who cares? He succeeded anyway.
I'm very happy with my C minus. I got there, got through.
That's all you need, man. It's a pass. It's a fucking pass. I tell you what, you're getting a lot more than a pass on these whiskies. I've only put it to my lips once now, but again, really interesting, wonderful finish.
Yes.
The peat of the Ardmore is so soft and gentle on this, though. It's really, really, again, normally I talk about Ardmore. Sorry, I say it time. Every time we talk about Ardmore, I say this. You're probably getting bored of me at home. You probably are tuning out now. It's a lovely amount of dirt in your mouth is my typical thing. It's just that filthy, earthy dirt, which again, lots of people who don't drink whiskey go, I don't want dirt in my mouth. I do. I always want it in my mouth. This isn't that, though.
No, it's got a little bit of that, but it's mainly wood ash.
Mm.
Right.
It's wood ash.
That's
it
is. It's the
remnants of the, the cask.
It's the floors of a Dunnage warehouse, that ash flooring. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never tasted that before, mate. Have you been licking the floors? And
get Springbank, come down on my hands and knees licking the floors, mate.
Don't you know? I'm sure there's been a cask or two leaks on there. I'm sure it's very tasty.
As soon as the cameras are fucked, just like...
But you're right, the finish again, you know, and I think that's where that's happened. I think that has dampened down the peat, that kind of flash. Well, it's not a flash finish, but, you know, it is, you know, a short and strong finish that integrates so well. And I think that does dampen down that peat.
I actually don't know as well. I'm trying to think about the Ardmore because we've got a lot of Ardmore casks under management ourselves and I love it. It is one of my favorite distillates and a really great expression that, again, like I say, you can just toy around with. You can do all sorts of things. We've got some of it which is leaving in bourbon, some of it that we've put into fresh sherry, some of it that we're putting into wine casks, fortified wine casks. It's so interesting, so diverse. We even tried, actually, it was Keeble Casks Ardmore that they put in rum. Was it not?
I thought that's where you were going.
I normally hate rum finishes. And George Keeble, and if you haven't watched it, it's at the Edinburgh Whiskey Festival. We've got the episode out. We'll link it in the description below. It's one of the few rum finish whiskies that just was so well balanced. It had this wonderful sweetness that balanced out the peat. But this is something entirely different again. It's really gentle touches of that earthiness. And in fact...
What age did you say this was? 13?
This is 13 going on 14 potentially. Okay. 2009 to 2023.
So really the peak, I mean, it would start, you know, levelling out and dropping off. But it would be up there for Ardmore.
Yeah.
You
know? I've got 15, 16 plus year old casks that are more peaty than this.
For sure.
I wonder if some of them are peated to different levels. That's what I'm as a super geek, I'm thinking about what the peat levels of Ardmore normally are. So I believe they're about 45.
No,
45.
What ppm?
PPM.
No, Ardmore's much lower. Ardmore's about, I think, from memory, is about 12 to 14.
Really?
No,
it's low.
Really?
It is low.
I'm going to Google this now because I'm fascinated. I've obviously got it wrong.
Yeah, that's I don't know. So I don't know if that's. I can't remember if that's malt ppm or post distillation ppm, but it is quite low. And some of them some of them really quite show peak.
14.
Heavily. 14.
Hey, that's after.
I do know what I'm talking about.
But no, because the measurement's normally before, isn't it?
No. It's barley. It's the barley.
Barley for?
Yeah, of course.
14
course.
Plus a million.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I always
that would drop off even more through the distillation.
Yeah, they don't go. The thing is, they don't get much reflux
in their
stills because their stills are. I don't know if you know about that. I'm such a nerd when it comes to this. So if you want to switch off from my talk, please feel free.
No, I'm here.
But Ardmore have got like the thickest base of their stills. It takes forever to warm them up because they were the second last distillery to go away from coal.
Right.
So they've got these thick bases that get no reflux because all of a sudden it spikes and then it's going there. Through the line arm.
Yeah.
So they kind of get quite textured, quite heavy. That's why it's quite meaty. Like sort of, and I think it's also why their peat tastes so... I think Ardmore show their peat as actual product, as actually earth, you know, burnt earth, more than most distilleries, which I love. Yeah. As you said, it's dirt in the mouth.
Yeah.
I just think they're great at that.
They're not worm tub, are they? No.
So I was just looking, 12 to 16 parts per million. So I was well off. Thank you for being here, Joe, and setting us right.
But you can see why.
Giving the people at home the correct fucking information. I was so far off. But yeah, no, but Joe's right. There is, you're so right. There is such a small amount of reflux. And I think that kind of, exactly, that turf-esque style, it just shines through in such a beautiful way.
I think it's why it's so decisive, why it's so Marmite-y as a dram.
Yeah.
Some people hate Ardmore.
For sure.
Especially IBs or single cars. People look at me like, why are you bringing this to me? And I'm like, trust me, I'm going to take you on a journey.
To be fair, it was someone that is massively into whiskey but does drink whiskey. I bought them a bottle of Ardmore for Christmas and they've given it to me back. They didn't like it, you know. It was too
And I think in our introduction into beat episode, which again, guys, probably isn't out yet, but it will be coming up, so stay tuned. We put Ardmore at the end. You know, we started out with a Highland Park and then went on to Springbank and kind of got from light Henry to oily, and then we built up to the Ardmore because, again, as I think I said in the episode, Ardmore can put people off. You know, it's not for everyone, and the last thing that we want to do, especially for any new whiskey drinkers that are tuning in and watching, is put them off. So, you know, whilst I think we're all thoroughly into this, fucking delicious, right?
I know,
it's really, really good stuff. Ardmore is always a favorite of mine, but if you're new to whiskey and you're not sure about those peaty, earthy, rich and bold flavors, maybe stay clear of this one. You know, whiskey is such a subjective and personal thing.
Yeah.
It can't be for everybody. But if you are looking for that turf in the mouth, that rich and thick smoke. In fact, this isn't a typical Ardmore. As it's opening up in my glass, it's getting a little bit more there. Mm-hmm. And I think if you were to leave it for 15, 20 minutes, it would probably be there more again. But it's a much lighter, sweeter, and the Madeira just complements it beautifully.
I think
I can't believe this is only 18. You guys are sourcing some seriously fucking great casks.
Yeah.
You know? I'm annoyed. I feel like sometimes in episodes it's good to have like a something that we bag on a little bit. I have not found any faults in any of these thus far.
It's funny there's you say that because I'm always a bit worried. And Joe, we are very honest here, and I think that's why the channel, you know, people like the channel. And you know, I had no doubt that you would bring some great whiskies. However, you are always a bit nervous about if you don't like something, we're going to say it. And like you said, so far, like there's bang after bang after bang in whiskey.
There's not a bad note. There's not an off note. You know, if you look at it, and again, you guys do quite a few tasting events, don't you?
Yeah.
It's a big part of what you, like you said at the beginning, of what you do. I would highly recommend you go along to a tasting event, particularly if it's hosted by Joe here. But anyone at the Berries team, I'm sure, could lead you through some of their wonderful whiskies in a beautiful way. And I think that what you've got is such a diverse range, such a wonderful and interesting journey of whiskies. And again, we talk about the fact that this is a seasonal release. I now want to come along to a tasting event for, you know, your summer whiskies, your winter whiskey. Oh, yeah. We want those rich fucking filthy.
That Great Gallicky is your spring release.
I want to see what's happening at Christmas time. 100%. You're on the same page as me there, Stevie. We have absolute filthy.
And does it work like that, Joe? Is it a continuous thing? Or is this just the... is this a first spring release? Is this something you do every season?
No. So we've been doing our spring releases since 2020.
Okay.
Early 2021. Mm. I think we started with Winter that came out January 2021.
Yeah.
If I remember rightly. Because as a bottler, we've been bottling spirits for about 200 years, we think. Mm. Our sort of the oldest bottle that we know of, that we have in our records, is 1853.
Really cool.
What
is that? Sorry, Joey.
That is, we don't know.
Okay.
It's
a whiskey.
It says Scotch malt on the label.
Cool.
Distilled 48, bottled 53. We found it genuinely at the back of a cupboard. Because this is what I don't think the family are particularly careful. They keep finding stuff at back of cupboards and like, oh, this is really old. Like they once about 10 years ago, they opened up, they found they had a storeroom where they had some of the archives that did survive and some bottles and stuff like that. Right at the back of it, when they were clearing it out, they found a case of green chartreuse, which they sent a photo to the chartreuse family because I think they're friends. Right. And they went... And we think that's the oldest case of chartreuse in existence.
Oh my God.
And they came for dinner. They were like, yeah, it is. So one got opened over dinner. One bottle got put into our cabinets, archives, and the rest went back to chartreuse's
men. Berries cupboard sounds like Narnia for a whiskey geek. Fuck it out.
And the fact that you keep discovering things, you know.
Yeah, there might be some.
Oh.
There's only one of them.
Well, you've been to the shop, you know. Yeah, like, right. There's probably cubby holes and, you know... cupboards that have been probably nailed up,
that
and there's probably just
the
treasures,
crannies, hidden
sitting there waiting to be discovered. Yeah. And also, you've got bottles sitting on the bottom of the bloody Atlantic Ocean in the Titanic.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about going down and rescuing those? Well, I did.
69 cases 69. Of mainly single state champagne and Macallan whiskey that were heading off to Manhattan, and they went down.
I know it's an expensive, rescue operation, but those bottles, if they were still intact, would go.
No, don't tempt him, mate. We're going to get our scuba license. We're going to go.
All right, mate.
I might implode.
I will swim down before you.
It's going to become a race.
I have been talking about this for 5 years.
Who's going to implode first?
Yeah, exactly, right? I don't feel as confident after recent years.
No, definitely not. I'm going to have a word with my friend James Cameron, try and get down there. In his slightly more expensive.
But there's just bottles turning up and history buried. And it's amazing. It really is. So what happened with those bottles of that you found?
They get put in a locked cabinet.
Right.
Which is now locked. It was unlocked for a while.
Does any of that get opened ever?
No, that one won't. Shame. I don't think it will be drinkable.
Because remind me, the first level down, you've got that lovely display behind
the
glass.
Yeah, the family reserve.
The family reserve. Those bottles get opened every now and then for special occasions.
Yep, the family, when they want to celebrate and do something. Yeah.
Okay. And sometimes the staff gets invited to those things.
I got told when I started that if you work for the company for 20 years, you get invited for dinner and you get to choose one of the bottles. Oh. I have thus found out that is not true.
Oh,
damn it.
19 years in.
I was like, I only had another 15 years to go. And I knew which bottle I wanted.
That's gas crack. That's a very good way of retaining your employees, right?
That's true.
So we got bottles there, but then some of our basically our spirits don't get opened because they are time capsules.
Sure.
They are absolutely like we have in that same cupboard. We have like pre-phylloxera cognac. So cognac that before the phylloxera pest ravaged Europe. So we've got bottles there. We've got like. Chartreuses and stuff like this that also just sit in our cupboards,
proper relics.
You can easily think of Berries as a museum,
because
you walk in. I mean, you've wandered around. Have you ever had the tour?
You have to
come in.
I'm sure we'll
find something tasty at the end.
Definitely.
Probably that.
I don't even want to know what your insurance bill is, to be honest.
I don't want to know either. Filthy. I'd probably be a lot more careful with the antique furniture if I did know.
And obviously, you guys started off in coffee.
Yeah.
That was your thing. Have you ever done anything with whiskey and coffee? Either, coffee beans and whiskey, or equally, whiskey... or coffee finished whiskey, or
won't be able to call it whiskey.
No,
unfortunately,
not even Scotch.
Yeah,
no, I know.
We do have cars from all over the world whiskies, so we could do something. We have never done whiskey, and we do a coffee liqueur. In our shop, it's only available on the shop. It's a bit of a callback to our history. It is delicious. I think we're sort of between bottlings at the moment, but
I'm surprised you aren't still selling coffee beans.
Yeah, I know.
I know you're busy enough, but
for a few years ago we did do tea and coffee in the shop, but no one was coming in to actually buy tea and coffee, so we're like, we'll move away from
shame.
That.
Fair enough. That is a shame.
Yeah.
If I was more London-based, I would definitely be doing it. But fair enough.
But a sort of, coffee barrel finished whiskey, you know.
Yeah, you're seeing them pop up a little bit more now, those sorts of experimental things. But as Jake says, you know, you can't, if it's scotch anyway, you
can't mess with the SWA, mate.
Denote it, yeah.
Very good, cool. Some wonderful whiskies. I'm looking to see if I can trip you up here. Come on, what have we got left? Let's see. Are any of them going to fall short? I don't think so.
So we've got two more bottles. And this next one is our last whiskey, and we're going to go to the Nordic country of Sweden now, cool. And our friends up at High Coast.
Okay.
This one is a little bit special. So I'll just open it up and we'll give it a go.
Cool. I'm interested. I have to say, we had a couple of samples through this distillery, Stevie.
Oh.
And they were all the best. It wasn't from the distillery.
This is personally.
This is a private client who reached out to us with some casks. And unfortunately, whilst we would love, we're always keen to work with private individuals.
They were very young, though, if I remember.
Bottlings, and they're 10 years old.
Were they?
Nearly.
Okay.
If not, I think one was 9 and one was 11 or something like that.
Fair enough.
But they weren't overly impressive.
So
tried stuff from here before and it was great, but yeah.
Educate me, is this quite a new, I know 10 years old, but is it fairly new distillery in the big scheme of things? Or
High Coast used to be called Box Distillery.
Okay.
Until they got told they had to change the name. Sure. So the distillery is still called Box. It's named after... it's in an old wood mill because the High Coast region used to be the forestry region of Sweden. Sure. So there used to be
plenty of wood mills there.
Yeah, loads of mills and stuff like that. And they opened up this distillery in the High Coast region, which is sort of northwest of Sweden, just on the edge of the Arctic Circle. And they have been going around since, I think, about 2008.
Okay.
Cool. 2010, I think it is.
I was going to say 2010-ish, but I don't know. Follow them.
They make their distillates go from very light, light and saline-y, all the way up to sort of heavily peated. This is their heavily peated style. They say their styles reflect the four walls of their distillery, because one side you've got the coast. One side you've got a glacier river, one side you've got a forest, and another side you've got a mountain.
They try and
for this one. This one is out of the forest called under their brand. They call it Timmer or Timber.
Yeah.
And it is beautiful, high sort of highly peated whiskey. They like their peat styles from from the West Coast. Kilhoman is the ones that they style their stills on,
okay, cool.
And their peat, but they're actually sort of process of making their whiskey. They really like what the Japanese are doing. Very, very clear wort, ultra clear wort, very quick cooled. They claim they have the coldest cooling water in the world of whiskey because it comes straight out of a glacier from an Arctic Circle.
What a claim to have. Cool.
They are very also cool. The most northern distillery in the world. They sit exactly on the 63 degrees latitude, whichever the one that goes the equator up way. They really use that sort of geography to sort of, you know, bring it out. And this is their peated whiskey, which is absolutely amazing. And then we've actually done a finish on this because
looking at this.
Yeah, I saw
it. Lochendahl.
Really?
What a fucking finish. I mean, Lochendahl casks are hard enough to find anyway, mm-hmm. to then be getting one and, let's use this as a finishing cask for an already peaty whiskey.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Felt like it needed a little bit more body, just a bit more drive.
Right.
Felt it may have been a bit light on that, finishing for the age. So we thought, you know, put it in that cask, give it a bit of a, you know.
59.8%, again, the alcohol is sitting so well. Mm-hmm. Can't slay you on any of them, Joe. They're all just hitting the spot here.
I was a bit nervous when you said this is what we tried.
I know, right? And as was I when I saw, just before we started filming. I'll be honest with you, Joe. We saw the lineup and that was the one I was like,
Okay, if I'm not going to lie, one of them, that's going to be the one I'm not going to
I thought that was going to be the case because you brushed over it very quickly when you're like, oh, why did you not to show over your shoulder?
Craig Ellicott, you're amazing. Oh, I love it. Oh, sweetie. Look, like I say, I've tried stuff from High Coast before and I've enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I haven't been blown away, but I've enjoyed it.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we were sent some casks by a private individual and... yeah, we really didn't enjoy them. And again, look, I don't like being negative about whiskeys. It's not my aim, you know, to set up a distillery and start producing whiskey. It's not easy, you know, especially when you're looking outside of Scotland to start creating regions and global whiskeys. Sweden, we get the world over now. It's amazing. Yeah. And I have so much respect and admiration for people who go out and try and do these things. So I never want to be down, particularly when it comes outside of Scotland. But we just really didn't enjoy these drams. Already, though, again, it's fascinating that you've decided to put this in an ex-Lochendahl cask. Yeah. I would probably buy it, even without tasting this, on that detail alone. I'm a massive Laddie fan and a bit of a geek, and we're always talking about Rins and Lochendahl being the kind of unknown and unsung heroes from Brick Laddie. But again, 59.8%. It's just exceptional. It's really... it's light and easy. And sorry, you were just saying that it was almost, like a light finish and there wasn't maybe, which is why you chose the Lochendahl cask.
I believe so, yeah.
I still think that now, as it sits in my glass here today, it's surprisingly light for a peated whiskey that's been finished in a Lochendahl cask that's nearly 60%. It's like, this is too easy. This is... It's incredible. It's an oddity.
Reminds me of the cream in the middle of custard cream biscuits, you know, with a little bit of smokiness, you know. But you're right. I was expecting very heavy peat because you said, you know, it's peated, then the Lochendahl. But no, it very, again, like the Ardmore, it's just very toned down and the sweetness is much more present. And I like it. I was worried. Not going to lie.
I really
just because it. My first experience was, as we say, we won't hop on about that. But yeah, but no, thank God, you know, they do put out a good spirit. And for sure, that's you guys wouldn't... You
that
guys,
was your first experience with High Coast.
Well, I wouldn't have ever touched it again.
Right.
You know?
That's a shame. So glad that you've then...
That's a naive outlook, I know. But at the same time, you guys wouldn't bottle something that wasn't good, right?
It's beautiful. It's very well balanced, and it is. It's super light, and there's not... I think I could sit here with it, and I could find lots of depth.
Yeah.
As it opens up. To me, the thing that's really, just really wonderful, it's kind of soft vanillins and a little bit fudgy, but it's that real heap of smoke. Yeah. I almost feel like I feel like a dragon here. Just as I swallowed it and I breathe out through my nose, that smoke just engulfs all of my senses. And I think that what you've done with the Lochendahl cask, because it is that real Lochendahl style, is just beautiful. You've incorporated two PT styles and just almost welded them together, you know?
Yeah.
And it is just a wonderful, rich, thick smoke that I feel is just, like I say, it's engulfing all of my senses as I'm breathing in and out now. It's still there. But the rest of the whiskey is, it's very light. It's very easy. It's very sweet. It's very gentle, you know? I'm like, I feel like the dragon in Shrek, you know, just this friendly...
Not the Sean Connery one out of, I was going to say Braveheart, Dragonheart. Remember?
No, I can't.
Joe, you must remember
it from films.
For sure.
But it's just that really, it's easygoing, it's approachable, it's lovely.
Yep.
But it's gentle smoke, rich and thick, but gentle smoke.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
It really is, isn't it?
Really it's delicious.
I think it's a great example that what world whiskies are doing. I think the Nordic region is something that we have actually sort of, you know, highlighted and worked with. We've had our two Nordic releases, Nordic 1 and Nordic 2, which we did a couple of years ago, which was the love child of our former spirit creator, a guy called Johnny McMillan, who loved what they were doing. So we started highlighting it. And on the back of that, we've got some extra casks. This Highland, this High Coast is one of them. And it's just, it's fascinating to see what they're doing because they are following the Scotch method.
Yeah.
They very much are. They don't want to divert away from that. But what the people are doing, especially in Sweden, people like Hightos are really sort of a different, unique take on it.
Well, then they're experimenting, right? Because they're not sort of
confined
by any rules. You can do what you like. So
on the way over, I was listening to your Wireworks, your White Peak episode, which
love White Peak. Big shout out White Peak.
Yeah, because we did a bottling of theirs last year as part of a release of English whiskies we did, and they were saying exactly the same thing. The fact is that there is a world of exploration you can do until you know, as eventually at some point you want to protect that. But right. At the moment, when you're a young region, especially the Nordics, when you've got that, play, have fun, really experiment, definitely. Do what you want to do. And I think, you know, High Coast are doing that. High Coast have got, I wouldn't be surprised if they're not got the aims of becoming one of the sort of the classic sort of distilled world whiskies. They have got a lot of drive and a lot of passion. And, you know, it's definitely one to watch. You don't see it as much in the UK yet, but.
No, as I say, I never heard of it before. I tried it with Jake, and then today, second time.
Changed your mind there. That's good.
Would question what's in those casks now.
I have to say, the longer this sits in my glass,
not yours,
the more Lochendal-esque it becomes. Mm. It really is kind of transporting me to Isla.
You're romantic about that, aren't you, mate?
Port Charlotte, Lochendal. Yeah. I mean, all of it, Rins, but Port Charlotte, Lochendal. Boom. It's just... It's special.
So, did you bottle Lochendal? Is that how you had the cask, or
I don't remember bottling a Lochendal.
Okay,
but we do a lot of like customer exclusives worldwide.
Okay,
so there may have been one that sort of.
It's interesting that you've got the cask just hanging around.
Yeah, I literally have no idea. This may have actually been a finish done by iCoast and ended up with us.
Right, okay.
I don't know. I was waiting for how long this is, but I don't know anything about this.
For sure.
It may be that. It may have been that we had a cask and we've done at some point. I should probably have a Google. They normally pop up on Whiskey Base or something like that to find out.
You can find out in a couple of seconds on Google.
Wherever this cask was come from, I'm so glad it's ended up in our possession.
Definitely.
I really want to know what's happened to it now, actually.
Definitely.
If we put something else into that, actually, that's a question.
Keep an eye on it, definitely. I think it's interesting when you use peated casks or casks that have held peated whiskies in them for finishing other whiskies. In all honesty, it could be, again, it's kind of similar to rum. It could be a real hit or a miss for me.
Yep.
A lot of ex-Lefroy casks, a lot of ex-Ardmore casks, and then you get a lot of the time, actually, unpeated whiskies finished in them. And sometimes it just really misses the mark for me. It really doesn't. It just, it's a this balance. You know, again, we talked earlier about casks of sherry or wine or whatever. And it's almost like this, am I drinking sherry or am I drinking, you know, this complete disjointment of whiskey and the finish. And again, the smoke can sometimes be completely unbalanced and just out of the picture and a separation between the two. And I think that this is a wonderful expression of how you can use a peated cask to finish, in this case, a peated whiskey to amplify that peat, to add something to that peat, to really give it that little bit longer finish. I'd love to try what it tasted like before it went into the Lochendal cask to see how much of an effect it has had. I believe it's had a lot of an impact because, like I say, I'm really tasting a lot more Port Charlotte and Lochendal sort of flavors as it sits in the glass. And, you know, I'm finished now, unfortunately. I've got a little bit more. I'm saving some of these.
He's hoarding all the samples.
Switched off the camera. I'm going home.
I'm
going to have a lovely afternoon to myself. Yeah, no, stay away, Joe. No, I know you brought them, but you've given them to me now. You can't be rude and take them away, okay?
This is why you always pull the drabs out, Joe.
But yeah, I just think it's a great example of that. It's again, great liquid, great wood, a company and people that know exactly what they're doing. And it just shines through every single dram. Let's see. Come on. Can you get seven for seven? Are we going to go? Are we going to go for the last one?
And this is not a whiskey, did you say?
So this is
a whiskey. This one is a rum. This is a single cask rum.
Cool. Okay.
From Guyana and from the famed Diamond Distillery.
Cool.
Right.
So before we go into this, our rums, we treat our rums very much like our whiskeys.
Cool.
We want to sort of, you know, have that character of wood, but we also want people to sort of know what we're doing with our whiskeys and trust that if they want to try something rum, I mean, I think I read a fact the other day that 90% of rum in the UK is still drunk in cocktails or mixed.
Right, for sure.
It is not a category where people sit and enjoy aged rum as you would whiskies, as, you know, sort of the American whiskies are coming over. Even sort of cognac is having a resurgence.
Yeah.
And I think it's a real shame. We think it's a real shame. We have a long history of working with rum. And I think there's some amazing stuff out there. And the Diamond Distillery is one of them. It's also goes under the name of the Demerara Rum Distillery. Yeah. They use Demerara sugar, which is probably one of the best in the world. Fun fact, they are the only rum distillery and one of the only distilleries left in the world that still uses wooden stills.
Right.
Amazing.
So they have very got, cool. They've got copper. They've got copper bases, but yeah. The rest of the still is they have three stills. They are all made of wood. They have like a pot still. They have a column still, which I have no idea how that works. And then they have like a hybrid one. And they use it. And what happens is because you've kind of got that cooling element of the woods, you get a lot of reflux, but you get a lot of texture and a lot of flavor. There's a lot of stuff for sure. Added to it. And it just makes for a really exciting rum.
I'm thinking back now. I don't drink huge amounts of rum, but I have tried a good amount of rum from this distillery. And I'm now thinking back, like, I didn't know that at all. Mm. That's really, really fascinating. What a great piece of information to have. One thing that always gets me about rum, and I know Ian's not here today, I'm sure one of the things he would ask, and sorry, Joe, I'm going to put you on the spot here again. Do you know where this was aged?
So most of this aging was tropical maturation.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and then it sort of came over to us, and then probably Aeon. So this is a 2013, so probably it's had at least 8 years tropical maturation.
Great.
And the last couple of years, by the time it's kind of come over and UK. sat in our rum warehouse.
Cool.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Because this is the thing, again, you know, we talked about the Swedish sort of category and these new world whiskies, and they've got a little bit more room to play. There's not so many rules and regulations, you know. And that can be great. And equally with rum, there's not as many rules and regulations. It can leave you open to playing around and having some crack and doing some really inventive and interesting things. At the same time, I feel like the great thing about the SWA is that it drives providing information for the customer.
Yeah.
How long has it been matured? What sort of wood has it been matured in? Let's give us as much information as is possible. And with rums, because of the lack of regulation, there's also sometimes a lack of transparency. And tropical aging versus, you know, aging it here in the UK, or it could make a huge impact.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Like a huge impact. And having that information as a consumer, again, you know, for me, somebody who started off with IBs and who's always looking to find out more and take information from one dram into the next, and rum matured whiskies. It's a category I struggle with,
yeah.
You know, but the more I learn about rum and then the more I can learn about the casks that are used for finishing whiskies when it comes to rum casks, the more I'll then be able to go, okay, well, there's a good chance I'll like that because of X, yeah. Y, and Z experience, yeah. Beforehand, you know? And I think that's the only thing about the rum category that bothers me sometimes that is missing is that information, that clarity. Yeah. So it's wonderful for you guys, obviously, having your great connections, having these incredible rums to be able to share that information.
Yeah. I mean, it is the big problem. Like, I can probably, with most of the whiskies we've tried, I can probably, with a bit of work and a bit of talking to contact, is find out what's still in like a still house that the whiskies have come from. This, I can tell you as much as I can, but I don't. The problem with the rum industry is that not many people go straight to the distilleries. It's all brokers. It's all bought from Holland and Liverpool. And
yeah.
Sort of, you know, it's a real shame because, as you said, the one thing I think holding it back is that lack of transparency. And we are trying to change that. We are trying to, you know, work directly with distilleries and actually kind of get more of that information. But until then, sort of, you know, we know we're going to get great cast. We try and most of the time we can only label it under sort of, you know, the country, because even though we can tell you where it's from, this one's a bit different. Also, there is only one distillery in this country.
Right, yeah.
So easy to sort of tell.
For sure. Pinpointing it doesn't take all that much work. Definitely.
It's always nice to taste rum like this.
Going as something you, a bit different.
Well, I just mean just on its own, you know, because obviously, as you say, you know, was it 90% of rum is drunk in cocktails? And I can believe that. Growing up, I loved rum, spiced rum.
Yeah.
Of course, I never drank it straight. You know, it was just not frowned upon, but it just was something you
wasn't
didn't
the norm.
Do. Wasn't the norm.
For sure.
Being in the whiskey industry, I love tasting any spirits just completely on their own to begin with. We went to a gin tasting or a gin event, you know, tasting gin on its own, a whole different experience, especially when it's good gin. When we had Chimmy in an episode, I think we finished off with a few rums, tasting those on their own. And when they're rums distilled like this, this is cask strength?
This is cask strength.
It must be,
Sorry, this is at the wonderful cask strength of 59.5. So it's still 2013, bottled 2023. So we're going to imagine a 9, if not 10-year-old rum. No finish. It's just a straight barrel maturation at 59.5%.
So this is more likely to be an American oak barrel. Probably virgin, maybe bourbon. So they sort of Caribbean uses a mixture of the two, I believe.
It just tastes more bourbon-y to me.
Yeah, it's got you can taste the corn in that. There's almost this like kind of like sweet rubberiness in it as well, you know.
Right, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly like, what you mean.
Kind of like balloons.
Balloons, right, yeah.
You
yeah,
know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, I know, on the nose, I know more what you mean.
Yeah.
For me, it's kind of a, it's like, you know, French bread, like eggy bread, French toast.
Oh, really?
But with demerara sugar on it.
Okay, I was going to say, what I mean? Or maple syrup or something.
No, but yeah, it's the sweetness of it, to me, and again,
sweet and savory.
I know that they use demerara sugar here, and it's maybe a little bit of a placebo, but it's that sweetness. It's as if you've kind of made eggy toast and you've then put, you know, caramelized some sugar on top of it.
That's such an interesting note.
Lovely.
Yeah. But perfect. I can see that.
Do you know what I mean? But I know what you mean on the forefront. Yeah. On the nose, there is almost a little rubberiness to it. I quite like that. And again,
oh, yeah, me too.
Jake or something, you know, you do rubber burning, and people are like, what the fuck are you drinking? Sounds awful. Yeah. I really like that note, and it's a great note.
It's not like a rubber tire.
No.
It's more of a, but yeah.
I know what you mean exactly.
Leading to all sort of like, you know, the rubber eraser sort of on the back of the pencil type thing.
Yes, exactly. Like,
it's a little bit waxy to me as well.
Waxy.
Right, but is that, like, that's where I'm sat. I think the one thing I love about this distillery is they really show molasses character.
Yeah.
So we're talking sort of those rich, dark molasses sort of flavours.
Absolutely.
Thinking about it for any of your viewers that or listeners that make Christmas cakes, that sort of lion's treacle that kind of comes out of the red tin, that's what I get from this. Mm-hmm. There's a lovely bit of fruit that opens up. There's a fruit that you get in the Caribbean and West Africa called a soursop.
Yes.
Imagine a tropical pie, like tropical pear, creamy. That's what I get from this as well. There is a beautifulness to this, some sort of like guava. I think there's a lot of fruit that kind of, you have to go hunting for this because it's hidden behind that demerara sugar, maybe that eggy bread type thing. Maybe you've suggested that in my head, but I definitely see
no, I hear what you mean. 100% there is, it does open up into that sort of tropical fruit notes, and it is quite a viscous strap, you know, like you say, that sort of treacliness. It's quite mouth coating and rich. Not an overly long finish, though.
No.
You know, it's wonderful the way it really kind of takes over your senses. And then it's one, you know, and just going back to what you said, Stevie, sorry, rums often used in cocktails. Mm. Please, guys, try your rums just neat. Maybe not your Captain Morgan's, you know. But when you start getting into these really interesting, you know, like, you're absolutely right. The episode with Chema, he left us a bottle of the plantation rum, and we'll drop in the link into the episode with Chema. You should definitely watch it if you haven't already. But having your rums neat is a really wonderful experience. And equally, I know that we've tried all of these whiskies here today, and we always focus on whiskey as a neat sort of expression. Please, guys, get your whiskies into some cocktails.
Mm.
Because again, so many of the whiskies that we've tried here today would be a fantastic backbone. I would argue all of them have something to offer for different cocktails.
Especially that Craig, you know? Would be a fantastic backbone to ice cream.
Right, you know, 100%, man.
You know,
learned well, young Padawan. Absolutely, definitely. But this is it. I think, you know, so often
pair
we look at
things,
whiskeys,
you know?
And we're thinking, oh, but there are rules associated. I must drink this neat, and I cannot have any ice, and I have to be wearing fucking slippers and a smoking jacket and have a cigar with it, and I must be an old man. No, please enjoy them how you want to enjoy them. And espresso. This is the spring release.
Yeah.
Sometimes in spring, you want that sort of, you know, a bit of a highball or a little bit, something a bit different. Please, guys, try your whiskies in different ways. It's wonderful to experiment and toy around. Once you found a liquid that you like, putting it into a cocktail, it can be a wonderful way to sort of amplify that whole experience.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Also, a lot of these drams go really well with sort of foods that you get around.
Definitely.
That Craig Ellachie is going to be great with if you're having like a Easter lamb. I think it would go really amazingly. I just thought, and I need to try this when I get home. St. David's Day is coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That with some like Welsh cakes, some of that sort of sweet, dried fruit, that would be.
Yep.
Yeah. It's definitely, I think, you know,
experiment.
You
said, there is
a world. People ask me, like, do you hate me if I put ice in whiskey? And I'm like, no. Like, why? Like, enjoy it. Yeah, do what you want.
As long as you don't make me drink it, it's fine.
I love it.
But no, completely that, Joe. You know?
I think people can get a bit stuck. And these products are just meant to be enjoyed. Enjoy them however you want. If you mix it with Coca-Cola, maybe do it behind my back.
Definitely.
Other cola brands are available.
Ian is normally in your seat, and his rider is a packet of 12 bites and a Coke Zero. And I personally cannot stand Coca-Cola. I can't stomach it. It's just the smell of it even is revolting.
But equally, I have no idea how he's picking notes out of whiskey when he's...
But he's got so much sugar on his palate, I know.
You know what I mean?
Hang on, there was a rider.
I know, right? You missed out, sorry. Too late.
For next time, Jay, what would your rider be?
What would it be?
Yeah.
I'm born of that.
Fair enough. But this is the thing, I think, you know, exactly that, Joe. Enjoy it how you want to enjoy it. Just because one person doesn't understand. It's like... whiskey anyway is so, or rums, they're all so subjective. One person may like something, you may not, and then vice versa, and toy around with it. Like Stevie said, have that experimentation, dive into it, get involved. The important thing is that you're enjoying yourself responsibly and experiencing different things, you know? And I think that's a beautiful thing about whiskeys, about rums, is there are multiple experiences to have within any bottle. What we've enjoyed here today might taste different in a different setting with different people, might taste different when you add food to it, might taste different in a cocktail. And so all of a sudden, you buy a bottle of one of these whiskies and you spend 50, 70, 100, whatever, however many pounds you spend on it, and all of a sudden you've got a multitude of experiences. And it's so worth the money, you know, it goes so much further. I think that's what's great about spirits as opposed to, you know, wines or other bits and pieces, you know, where you can kind of have maybe a little bit more of a singular experience. Spirits have such diversity and can be enjoyed in so many different ways. I'm really enjoying this rum. It's a good one, right? It's a really good one.
Opened up in the time. Like, I'm really getting some like toffee, some proper toffee in the background of that. That's
chewy almost.
Chewy, yeah. That and sort of a bit of a herbaceousness on top. It's
When people say fudge, this is fudge for me.
Yeah,
you know, very, very sweet, chewy fudge.
Mm.
What a beautiful selection of samples you've brought us, Joe.
You have not faltered at any point here.
Oh, no.
So well done.
I was a bit nervous when I was opening up the rum. Yeah.
No, I think you've done exceptionally well. All right, cool. Well, look, what we always do is we do a buy and we do a don't buy.
Mm-hmm.
I think as the global ambassador for Berry Spirits, we're not going to put you on the spot there.
Yeah.
I'm sure you buy all of them, right?
Oh, yeah. I have to stop myself from not actually. I don't have enough room in my flat for all of the bottles.
Even if you've got a company discount, you're not making yourself broke spending all the money.
It's very clear that we love all of these whiskies that are coming out in spring, right?
Definitely.
I think we should pick our top three. And I have my top three already.
Fair. What I'd like to do is I'd like to run through all of them from a price point of view so that everyone at home knows.
Yep.
So that, like we say, look, these are probably just going out now.
That's fine.
As this episode goes live. So let's get some price points. Let's run through what we've enjoyed thus far. Let's give it a buy, don't buy. But then exactly, let's give it a top three, all three of us. And that'll be a great way for you to get involved as well, Joe. So, all right. So we started off with a Glenlossie, which was, I believe, a 9, maybe 10-year-old Glenlossie. Yep. Watered down to 46%. What a wonderful, sweet and easygoing way to get involved in springtime. Where are we at price point on that? £70?
£70.
£70. Stevie?
As I said, mate, I'm going to do top three because they're all buys.
Okay.
You know?
It's a definite buy.
Yep.
Definite buy. So £70 on the Glenlossie 10-year-old. We then moved on to the Knockdo, which was a...
2012. 11-ish.
10, maybe 11-year-old. Yeah. Cool. Which was, you know, again... other than the Glenlossie, all of these are cask strength. The Knockdo came in at 58.4, £75, if I remember correctly. Cool. Again, a definite buy. It's a really wonderful expression. Very stripped back distillate.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And I love your description of Craigellachie's younger brother. I'm stealing it. cool. Definite buys there. Then we moved on to the Craigellachie. £90?
£90.
Stevie.
Mate, I just told you I'm buying them all.
It's just a buy?
Skip me. I want to get to my top three.
Craigellachie for me.
No, this is...
an oosh!
Yeah, sorry.
That's why I asked That Craigellachie is so fucking good.
For the price point, it is a big oosh for me. And I'm sure Joe will be an oosh. And it's an oosh.
£100. Yep. We are talking a seriously well-balanced whiskey that is beyond its years.
Yep.
It's exceptional. Great cask selection. Margaux wine. So interesting, so different. Craigellachie, not something that you see all the time now, and it's only going to get more expensive, guys. So for £90, I really think you've got a fantastic steal there. A definite oosh from both of us. We moved on then to the Glengarry.
Yep.
The Glengarry, which was finished
after,
in port.
Yes, I think
we did.
Yep, we did.
Yep.
I'm not misremembering it. No, don't make me look bad.
You're remembering it right.
Glengarry, finished in port. Talk to me.
It has not made it onto my cheat sheet, so I'm just going to quickly look through this. Glengarry. Not a clue. Probably about £90, £100, I would guess.
Okay, so £100, maybe a little bit less. Again, it was really interesting. It was different for me. It's a definite buy. I'm not getting quite as excited as the Craigellachie, but it's a definite buy. You're buying it as well at that price?
No, it's an oosh for me.
It's an oosh for
you? Yeah, if it's under £100,
yep,
absolutely an oosh. It takes me back to being a naughty little kid at school and then leaving school and getting a bag of sweets for being naughty. So
we're a bold boy.
I love port finishes when they're done well. So hats off, Berries.
Let me look up the price and we can drop it in the comments underneath.
Yeah, that's fine.
And are these going to be available to buy online out of interest?
So, yep.
Cool. So what we'll do is we'll make sure there's a link below so that you can buy all of these online.
Absolutely.
You can get your hands on them before anybody else, hopefully, because I'd imagine most of them being single cask, they're going to sell out fucking quickly. where did we go from the Glengarry?
Glengarry, we went to the Ardmore.
Ah, the Ardmore.
The Ardmore.
Which was a really
Ardmore.
Interesting finish. Yeah. Really wonderful. Again, not your typical Ardmore for me. How much is that one?
So that one is £96.
£96 for the Ardmore. Madeira finish at 53.6%. Again, it's got to be a buy. I'm spending too much money here, mate. I need to get another job. Fucking hell. Spending all of my money is at Berries. It's delicious whiskey. It's a really strong buy. Wonderful, wonderful Ardmore and something a little bit different from me. Not quite as bullshit and in your face. Stevie?
Yeah, it's a definite buy. I don't drink or have much Ardmore, but I'd love to have this in the cupboard, you know, especially for people that come around, try something a bit different. You don't see Ardmore too much in Indies, or at least I don't anyway. So, yeah, great finish. Strong buy.
Cool. We went from the Ardmore to the High Coast?
Yep, went to the High Coast.
High Coast, obviously Sweden, putting out some great whiskies now, guys. Check them out. It's great to hear that actually you hadn't had a High Coast experience other than our bad one. So this is kind of... turn things around. I've had good ones before, that's the thing. So I hadn't been put off by that.
Right.
You know, each cask is so different. And
This
is the thing, guys, particularly when you come to these sorts of single cask expressions, it's such a wonderful and unique way of enjoying a just a split second of time for a distillery. You know, there are no two casks the same. We have bought casks that are literally sister casks, number one and number two, that have been filled on the same date into the same type of wood that came from the same forest that had the same bourbon or sherry or whatever it was in before. They've been matured in the same warehouse for the same amount of time, and they come out tasting so different. You know, so really don't sleep on these sorts of single cask releases. You are capturing something truly unique and different. And this High Coast was, again, great to hear that you're back on the High Coast.
I've been converted back.
Yeah, cool.
Price.
I thought it was wonderful. I was just about to ask, where are we at price-wise?
So, £110.
£110. Okay. Oh, maybe not a buy. Okay. Ooh. He's at least wincing at the price a little bit. So this is a... how old was it again?
2012. So
10, maybe 10, 11 year old.
Yeah.
10, maybe 11 year old High Coast. I think this is again, a little bit more borderline for me. What pushes it over into just a buy is the fact that it's got that Loch and Isle style on it. And it really transports me to Bruichladdich. It's that Port Charlotte-y, Loch and Isle-y smoke. It's wonderfully balanced and gentle and soft, but the smoke really engulfs it. It's a buy. It's probably, I don't want to say my least favorite. That sounds negative. It's the one that I'm not as excited about. Do you know what I mean? I think it's really wonderful. And it's a beautiful whiskey. But we have to be honest here. It's still a buy for me at £110. Stevie, what are you thinking there?
I didn't wince as such.
Well, you were, I don't know, £110.
I was expecting a little bit less.
Okay.
However, with the, say, heritage of that Loch and Isle cask, I think it does maybe deserve that price point. And I think if I wasn't to buy all of the rest, which I am, I would go for that one. So I'm going to say buy.
Okay.
If I wasn't to buy all the others.
For sure. Okay, for sure.
Penciled in buy.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'll tell you what, you've got all of our savings here. Talk about being a bold boy. You've got my fucking monthly... What's happened there? And finally, we went on to the Diamond Distillery, which is 2013 to 2023, 59.5. The thing about all of these whiskies, Joe, that I have to say, the alcohol just sits in the glass so well. The fact that they're all cask strength, whether they've been finished or not, in the case of this Diamond Distillery rum, it's just such a beautifully well-balanced liquid in every single glass. It's wonderful. And again, guys, check out Berry's for tasting events, because maybe buying into all of these bottles, you know, like me, you're thinking about my pocket money is quickly depleting. But if you can't buy all of them, you can only buy one or two. I'm sure you can get down to Berry's, get involved in a tasting event, try lots more. Where are we at price point on the diamond?
So 125.
125. Okay.
For the diamond.
Again, rums is not something that I buy all that often, and it's not one that I would jump at as quickly as I would jump at pretty much all of the others. It's just about a buy for me. 125, it's a really good rum. It's wonderful. It's got a lot going on in the glass, and I would be excited to own it. I wouldn't buy more than one bottle, whereas the Craigellachie, I'm going to see if I can fucking take all of your stuff. I'm going to fight you for that bottle there before you leave, to be honest with you, mate. But no.
There's a lot of stuff between me and the door.
It's I know, right? I've got an umbrella. I'm seeing what I can weaponize.
Hopefully
here.
I can try and knock over the sample with you if I can hold it. You can distract you.
But no, look, I think, you know, even at £125, it's good value for money. And I think that's what all of these drams here represent. Good value for money. An independent doing really great expressions really well. So it's a buy from me. Stevie.
Yeah, it's just a buy from me. Only because you can denote where their rums come from, you know, and put down all the details, which sometimes you don't get with rum. I don't often reach for rum, but to have, and I don't have a rum in the cabinet. It would be great to have rum in the cabinet for when people come around and say, "You like rum?" "Yeah, I love rum." We'll try it on its own.
Yeah.
At this percentage.
Seriously good rum.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that deserves to be that bottle that I have to be like, try this. And I'm sure everyone would be like, Jesus, this isn't rum as I know it, but it's great.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's exactly, is it? You couldn't have put it better. 100%. That's exactly where this rum belongs. Cool. So, definite buys all round. A couple of ooshes as well. Joe.
Yes.
Let's start with you, sir. What are your top three? Let's start with number three.
Number three. Oh, number three. I've got to go for the Not Do. Actually, for number three,
okay,
I think it really shows the distillate really well. I think it shows a distillery that just isn't known isn't sung is barely ever seen. It's the first time I've ever seen an independent bottling of it. I think it's a fantastic sort of expression of what it is.
Cool. I like it. Stevie, what's your number three stack?
I'm going to go with the rum.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I love it.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it either. Cool.
Yeah. For the reasons I said before, it's something different. Look, we can all pick our favourite scotches out and we are all spoiled, with the, options of scotches that we can drink. But as I say, rums don't come around that often for me. So that's why I'm picking it today as my third tier bottle.
Cool. I like it.
Cool.
For me, I'm going to go for the Glenlossie.
Mm.
It's the only one here today that's been watered down. And it's, again, I slate sort of low-strength whiskies. And it's not that this is low-strength. It's 46. It's still holding its own. But it's just so beautifully balanced. There's a lot going on in that glass. You know, springtime, definitely there. I'd equally say, if you're buying a bottle and you maybe sit on it for a while, this is going to be great in the summertime as well.
Yeah.
So this is, this fits a few different seasons for all the right reasons. It's a great expression of Glenlossie and it really impressed me. So again, not only are you guys doing some great finishes, but you're actually getting the bottlings right in all ways. And I think the Glenlossie was a really great example of it. So that's my number three. I think I know where our number ones are going all across the board.
I think.
But let's go to number two. Yeah. Joe, where is your number two, sir?
Well, I'm actually surprised at myself here because I thought until about 10 seconds ago I was going to go for the Glengarry as my second. But okay. I think I'm going to have to go for the Ardmore.
Okay.
I'm dropping the Glengarry. I am shocked. Just thinking about it, it was really different.
It was
soft, like soft peat, that kind of earthiness comes through a little bit. That Madeira cask is just, I think what I love about Madeira cask, it's not as sweet as your sherries or your ports. It shows a bit of nuttiness. I think it's sort of, I think it's putting itself in there at number two.
Ardmore at number two for Joe. I love it. Okay, cool. Stevie.
My sweet tooth is leaning towards the port finished
Glengarry.
Yeah. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Took me back to a low time. And that's whiskey for me. That's what is great about whiskey, is it takes you back to a place in time sometimes.
Yeah.
And it really did. Very sweet tooth. Loved it. As you say, Joe, showed the distillery character and merged that port really well. So, high number two for me.
Love it. Love it. I agree with you, Stevie. And going back, just the Ardmore for me was a close in place for number three, to be honest. It's really was something different. The Glenlossie just really impressed me, though. The fact that it hadn't been finished, it hadn't been touched. I just think it's a really wonderful expression. And you guys have given it you've given it everything it needs to shine as a Glenlossie, which is why I just edged out the Ardmore. But other than the Ardmore, the only one that really shocked and surprised me today, and my number two, is the Glengarry as well.
Mm.
It was something that was challenging, that was different to what I was expecting, that gave me an experience that, to be honest with you, I've been in whiskey now for, 9+ years, I think. It gave me something entirely unique that I've never experienced before, that kind of real separation of liquid that then very quickly became this symphony, this full circle experience. It's exceptional. And I am stealing the idea of port finished Glengarry. Hold tight, guys, at the Whiskey Baron. We're going to have some Glengarry finished at port soon. And it's all thanks to Berry's here today.
Well, you've got to bottle what you like, mate.
It's a really great expression. You know. And this is the thing, Steve, exactly that. Obviously, as an independent bottler, I'm taking these thoughts and ideas and these expressions that I'm trying, and I'm using that information to then affect what we bottle. But for all of you guys at home, just because you're not an independent bottler, it's still great to get involved, particularly with independent bottlers like Berry's, who give you a wealth of information about each and every expression so that you can then take that experience, take that information, and apply it to your next dram. Today, as Stevie and I and yourself, Joe, we all enjoyed that port finished Glengarry. It's something so different to your usual Glengarry, which would either be stripped back grassy or maybe a heavy sherry finish.
Yeah.
And knowing that, you can now start looking for similar style distillates in port casks. And I think that's what's so exciting about independent bottles. So number two for me is the Glengarry. I don't think we even need to ask.
Are we just going to say it all at once?
All at once, shall
three,
we?
3, 2, 1.
It's the Glengarry! Oh, my God. Joe, listen, I know that this is obviously the business you work for. You love all of these spirits. And the way you've guided us through them today. I have to thank you so much. And I'm sure everyone at home is so grateful that you've come along and given us a really wonderful deep dive into berries. Again, guys, Joe was there with Ian over on the Whiskey Baron channel, and he gave us an incredible tour and insight into the history of Berry Brothers and Rudd. But today we've got to try what's upcoming. And we are so grateful for you sharing these drams with us today. I know that you love all of them, but that Crick Allegheny.
That's a serious fucking oosh. That was worth waiting for.
I think it was your first time today as well.
It's been sitting on my shelf. It has been teasing me since I got this sample pack.
And how many bottles have we got of that?
There's
one there.
298 in existence.
Cool, I'll give you 150
quid. You're
going
to have to fight me outside of Berries in order to get your hands on one, because I'm going to be there trying to get
There's not a lot of bottles.
I am actually just a bit of a plug. So we have actually got an exciting thing that couldn't share with you when you were at our store.
Okay.
But we have got a new spirit store opening. The first time ever. The first time we've had an exclusive spirit store at Berry's, number one St. James's, so on the corner.
Okay.
The reason why I'm saying this is the first two Thursdays of April, when we open at the beginning of April, I'm going to be doing some barrel top tastings with these whiskies. So unless you guys have come and stolen all of the Craig Allegheny,
don't bet against it. There's a very good chance that happens.
Hopefully we'll have some open. So any of your watchers, listeners,
fantastic,
want to come down, say hello, come and try some
the
stuff.
The first 2 days in April, did you say?
First two Thursdays.
And first two Thursdays in April, guys. Make sure you get down.
Can you just turn up, Joe? Would you need to get tickets?
That is very much. I will be there from 4 till 6:37, I think the opening hours are, from 4 o'clock.
First come, first Craig Allegheny.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
Have a big chat. So we have got this exciting
news. Oh, amazing. Congratulations on that.
Congratulations, really indeed. Cool. Fantastic.
So we will be doing events. So you mentioned our tastings. Have a look on bbr.com. I've got a couple of things in the diary.
Fantastic.
I can't remember at the moment. I've had 7 drinks.
We won't judge you for that at all. We will make sure that we speak with you before this goes live. We'll get a few links. So check out the links in the description, guys. There's going to be links for tastings. There's going to be links to the website. There's going to be links for all of the incredible expressions that we've tried today. I think that Crick Allegheny stood head and shoulders above the rest. Even though all of them were incredible drams, that is a serious winner. I'm going to fight you for one. But Joe, thank you so much for giving us a tour of what is coming from this incredible independent brand that you guys have got. Berry Brothers and Rudd, not only a wealth of history, but some seriously exciting stuff up and coming. So all of you, stay tuned. Berry Brothers and Rudd, thank you, Joe.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
No,
thank you, Joe.
Not at all. You're always welcome back if you're going to bring stuff that way. Come back anytime, sir. We'll see you next time.
The next release gonna better be punchiers.
Yeah, you're coming back for winter, whether you like it or not, mate.
Exactly, yeah. We'll tie you down. Yeah. Listen, guys, keep an eye open for Berry Brothers and Rudd, but also keep an eye open for our next episode here from Uncut and Unfiltered. It's been lovely to have you join us. We will see you next time. Slán gheofar.
Cheers.
Nice one. That was a hefty episode. I like that.